like the movie fine so far.
It hasn't started yet.
That's what I like about it.
Yours, mine, theirs.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, a podcast about the joy of movies and the terrors of democracy. My name is Sergeant John Madsen, Detective Lieutenant of the British Steam Engine Society. You can call me J-Dog, though. Who's here with me?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Interior, basement, night, John.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast about the joys of movies and the terrors of television shows. I'm Sergeant Brigadier John something, and who here's with me? Eric and John listen patiently to the less than clever greeting from Roy Fillmore and his microphone mayhem for the Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast, which am us. This is a podcast of very heavy-duty proportions.
Over.
Oh. Holy cow, was your intro long enough, John?
Okay. Yeah, no, that was good. Okay, good, good.
And I'm Eric Kimmery, glad to be back joining you guys from Darkest Idaho.
Excellent. That's how it's done. Okay, welcome back, Eric. This is your obligation, so no pressure. You know, you don't have to, you know, feel the pressure of loving or hating these movies. But a bit different than last time. We're doing something a bit crazier this time because we're watching movies that are based on TV shows. And I do have a massive complaint about one of the things that we're doing. So as part of that, though, we are watching apparently the most popular episode of each of these movies. So the Muppet movie was nominated. So we're watching the Muppet. We're talking about the Muppet movie, and we are also talking about the episode of the Muppet Show where Alice Cooper was on, which blew my mind. Then, of course, Police Squad, Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad. The TV show is Police Squad. We're watching the first episode of Police Squad, and then we're talking about Paddington 2. And there was a cartoon about Paddington. And that's where there's kind of a hang up, because I really don't think the movie was based on this cartoon at all. But we'll get more into that because there's a lot of other Paddington media. So
I thought about that, right? Because like that's the only one where it's actually based off of a book, right? And there just happened to have been a cartoon that predated the movie. But but what's most important to me is I need to find out if, being from Idaho, Eric, have you tasted sparkling Muscatel, which is Idaho's finest champagne?
Oh, yes, I found that. I didn't find it, but I recognized that in the movie, and I thought, that sounds about right. Haven't tried it, though. But I thought the representation was about accurate.
Okay, yeah. Gosh, a lot of geography to cover this time as well.
Yes.
So, okay, well, let's see. Has anything happened with you guys in the last couple of weeks? We haven't spoken at all, so, you know.
I watched a movie. I've seen one movie, if we're going to go over movies. So I finally saw Scream.
Probably should have seen at least three.
I should have. But we already talked about 355, right? So I saw Scream, and neither of you have seen it, or at least John hasn't seen it. I don't know if you have, Eric.
I saw it.
Okay, so how did you feel about, like, the villain and like why the villains were the villain?
Around this, boys.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to talk about, but
I think the movie did a good job of like complaining about itself throughout the movie, right? Like pointing out how ridiculous it is that the movie's even here, right? But then like the villain turned me into the villain for him, right? And that doesn't make sense to John, but it should make sense to you. So anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it had some good scares, though, and I love the oven at the end. Good use of stovetop, so.
Yes.
Yeah. And good talk. People get killed.
Yeah, good talk. Good talk on Scream. nice work. Yeah. I'm really sorry I haven't seen it. But, you know, also maybe some of the listeners haven't seen it, too. So way to restrain yourselves.
Oh, man. Yes. So it's possible that the listeners haven't seen this new movie called The Muppet Movie. So, but it's going to get spoiled. So I'll let you guys know when to fast forward.
Yeah, you guys can pause and then catch up on it and then resume.
So I'm trying to watch all of the Oscar nominated movies, like at least starting with Best Picture.
I did that last year for all the Best Picture movies. I actually saw all the Best Picture movies last year, and this year I haven't seen any, and a couple of them are back in the theater because the Oscar nominations, and and I don't know. I guess I could probably try and find them streaming.
Well, I'm going to try. I mean, well, you saw Dune, so you're ahead there. And I happened to see Don't Look Up, which I didn't really care for. But for Valentine's Day, Katie and I, you know, she was like, okay, well, let's watch the most romantic Oscar movie left. And it turns out that that was half of Nightmare Alley. So just working our way through Nightmare Alley. That's the one. I mean, we could have gone out and seen West Side Story, but you know, we didn't have enough time. I mean, surely there's romance in West Side Story from my understanding of it. And apparently that's really good. But yeah, we just didn't have time to actually go to the theater. And also, you know, I'm still super paranoid of people, you know, and I've been paranoid for 20 years, you know, it's nothing to do with this disease thing.
Now you have a built-in excuse.
Yeah. But I do happen to know that West Side Story, I believe it's going to be like on HBO or Disney or somewhere.
Month. You've never seen it, or you're not aware of the, how the story goes?
No, I've seen the old one.
Okay. Of course you've seen it. Okay. I was about to say it's Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't have the most romantic ending, I suppose.
Well, maybe. I mean, I hear there's some pretty significant, not significant maybe, but I hear there are quite a few story changes and a slight change to the ending in the new
movie. Oh, man. In the ending, do they work out their differences? They just like, as they're about to fight, they're like, hey, this isn't going to solve anything.
I think so. I think so.
They're friends. They have a big roundtable discussion and they all agree to disagree, and that's pretty much the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, it solves everything, and that's why we're living in such harmony today, because they solved that, you know, whenever it was set, like in the 50s of New York or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Eric, no movies besides these three?
I saw Licorice Pizza, which was I thought was really good.
Oh, okay.
Kind of a little different, but
see, that probably would have counted as a romance too, but we didn't have that available to us. So that's on my list. We've been meaning to see that for a while. I know that's in the theater here. That's good. Do you watch any other Paul Thomas Anderson movies?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few, and it kind of, I'd say it fits into the canon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're into Paul Thomas Anderson movies and his style, it's more of that, you know, so a little untraditional, but still good. I liked it.
I mean, I respect Paul Thomas Anderson a lot, you know, now that I think about it, but I don't really like him a lot. I can go through his movies right now really quick. Like Heartache was a movie and I saw it, you know, with a bunch of friends, you know, for this, on this movie marathon thing that we did. Boogie Nights, I think, is incredible, especially when they sing the song from Transformers, the movie. It's really good. I never got around to Magnolia, actually. I hear it's super good, but I haven't seen it. I didn't get Punch Drunk Love. I just didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I thought There Will Be Blood was highly overrated. There was way too much Paul Dano and there didn't need to be. I couldn't sit through The Master. I just got super impatient. Phantom Thread, I thought, was actually super good, and it was way different than all the other ones I've seen. Inherent Vice, thought was a little bit too secure in itself, and it wasn't as entertaining as I felt it thought it was. And then here we are. I think that's it with Licorice Pizza. So I'm very curious about Licorice Pizza because it does seem kind of like Phantom Thread, like way different than all the other ones. So I'm curious about it.
Yeah, I didn't see the Phantom Thread. That's a couple of those I haven't seen. But the Phantom Thread, I never got around to. It just felt like homework. Like,
yeah, totally.
I hear it's good, but it just feels like a chore.
Yeah,
it's not going to be fun, I don't think. But I'll probably be glad I saw it. But
yeah. So speaking of homework, when we're going to get to it, but I ended up watching every single episode of Police Squad.
Oh, wow. The whole series?
Yes, episodes.
How did you manage to find the time that's actually less time than the entirety of the first Naked Gun movie?
But actually, it had an effect on me, and we'll talk about it because it also kind of applies to what I think of the movie. But anyway.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. Well, I do have a few things to say between Police Squad and Naked Gun that I that are interesting to me, but maybe no one else. All right, should we talk about these?
we have to at some point. So, yeah.
I guess let's get around to it. Okay, so first of all, the Alice Cooper episode of The Muppet Show, followed by The Muppet Show. Shoot, who's in charge? Is that the one that won?
Yep, that's me.
So that's you. Okay, you go ahead.
Does everyone know what they're talking about, Eric?
I do now.
Okay, yeah.
It's all right.
All right, so did you guys watch The Muppet Show growing up?
I remember it was on in the background. I was like, I feel like I was too young to like internalize it like into my adult life, but I remember it was always on, you know?
So
yeah, kind of the same. I remember it being a thing, but I don't have any recollection of caring for it or specifically watching it.
So our family watched it weekly, and there was one episode with Liza Minnelli where like Muppets were being murdered, and it gave me nightmares for years.
Is that why you dreamed about Big Bird wanting your legs?
It could be. Good memory, John. So, so this is in the third season of The Muppet Show, and people kind of have a foggy memory of The Muppet Show, but The Muppet Show at one point was the biggest thing on television. Like at its peak, 300 million people were watching The Muppet Show per week.
Are you sure? You better carry that decimal. It's got to be 30, not 300.
No, it's 300 million because it was shown worldwide. Like it had a worldwide viewership of about 300 million at its peak. So, like, if you compare that to like the Super Bowl, about 100 million people around the world watch the Super Bowl, and so it's crazy how insanely popular The Muppet Show was. It's odd though; I don't remember the Alice Cooper episode, and it's probably because there's no way my dad would have let us watch Alice Cooper,
because I mean this episode certainly leans into the fears of Alice Cooper. Like, yeah.
So it's fascinating because Alice Cooper, when they approached him to be on the show, he said his big fear was he kind of had this reputation and he didn't want to like dumb it down or make it family friendly. And they said, no, you do whatever you want. Like anything goes. And I think it's still pretty darn family friendly. Mm-hmm. Right. But so, yeah, Alice Cooper comes on, right? So anyway, the show basically is Alice Cooper is exactly who you think he is, to the point that he has I'm changing my technology right now.
You're taking mine. I know it.
Okay. Anyway, he has a deal with Satan that he's going to get one of the Muppets to sell their soul. Kermit's not going for it, but Gonzo's all ears. He's ready.
In fact, Gonzo nearly sells his soul for a pen to sign the contract to sell his soul.
Yes, that is true. So, let's see. I got to change this. Okay. So I think we are going to have the same technology for laughing about this. So anyway, he has like three musical numbers, and they're pretty good. The first one is it's on our Halloween album. What is it? It's
Welcome to My Nightmare.
Welcome to My Nightmare, and he's got the red cape, and I mean, it's fun. It's a good song. It's when I see him in the cape, though, all I can think about is Anything Can Happen on Halloween with Tim Curry.
Tim Curry,
yeah,
also
which is
appearing
not great.
Somewhere in this podcast.
Yeah, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm trying to think of where he is. Okay.
Well, he was in the Paddington suit in the movie.
He was wearing the Paddington suit. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, then the second number I didn't recognize, but he sings like a love ballad to like a scary looking monster. And it turns out that it's Miss Piggy and he had transformed her into a demon and then she transformed back. And so she slipped through his clutches too. And then at the end, they actually play Schools Out. So on The Muppet Show, like a family friendly show, he does his musical number about blowing up your school, which is pretty great. And he's wearing like this red patchy unitard with a red tail and he's got a pitchfork. It's pretty good. I mean, there's not much more to say about this episode than, I mean, that's what it was, right? It turns out that Alice Cooper loved it. He loved doing it. He said it was one of the most fun things he's done in his career. So,
sure.
Yeah, good for him.
By the way, 29 years old. A 29-year-old Alice Cooper.
Holy cow.
Oh,
yeah, oh my goodness.
I thought he was like 45. I know, totally.
So I think the two things that Alice Cooper is most proud of in his career are probably The Muppet Show and then when he was on Space Ghost. But that was a disappointment because Space Ghost failed to charm his socks off. So anyway, the Space Ghost episode with Alice Cooper, go watch it. Okay, so this is fascinating because this episode came out the same year as the movie. So this show was in its third season before the movie came out. That's that. If there's nothing else to say about the TV show, I'll just launch right into the movie.
Sure. Yeah, that's. I mean, you got the plot of the TV show. I mean,
yeah, it was. Do you guys recall Alice Cooper being a thing? Like, being like scary or something? Like,
I always felt he was kind of like a little cartoonish, right?
Yeah, like he was like a cartoon vampire come to life. Like he wasn't.
He's not Ozzy Osbourne, right? He's not like Black Sabbath. He's more like he's somewhere between Black Sabbath and the Aquabats. I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, as is everyone, but yeah, he definitely falls between those two somewhere.
Well, I mean, he was always in the background growing up, but like I think our generation's big introduction to Alice Cooper is when he appeared in Wayne's World.
Oh yeah.
And the whole point of his appearance in Wayne's World is, you know, is you think it's going to be the most debauched thing ever to go backstage pass with Alice Cooper. And he's just talking about the origin of the city, Milwaukee, and just being very civil with his bandmates. And that's it. And so when I think of Alice Cooper, I just think of this nice guy who's backstage. And I think Wayne's World taught me that.
that's funny. So my favorite Alice Cooper song, by the way, is probably 18. That's a great song. So also there was just this crazy rumor, which I don't believe, but it was one of those crazy Mormon rumors that Alice Cooper was a member of the church.
There is some truth in that, actually.
So
it's just from what I understand, it's not that Alice Cooper was in an LDS family, but his father was part of like an offshoot fundamentalist LDS family.
Oh.
And so they had some of the similar practices, which is probably related to the rumor you've heard.
Okay. So it has a little more truth to it than Steve Martin getting baptized in that rumor. So, okay. So here we go. The Muppet movies. So the Muppet movie opens with a whole bunch of Muppets in a movie theater. Kermit's there getting ready to show the Muppet movie to all the Muppets, right? And the theater is just full of Muppets, including you have the Pigs in Space captain. Is like Link Heartthrob, I think is his name. So he's there watching it. And I think he's got his little nephew there, says, "Is this how the Muppets came to be?" And he's like, "Well, it's sort of." So this is not a faithful narrative of how the Muppets came to be, but it's a fun movie.
It's exactly like the beginning of Strange Brew.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, quick sum up of the plot here. Kermit is in the swamp. He's met by an agent, Dom DeLuise, who convinces Kermit to try out for a part because there's an ad in the paper that says frogs wishing to be rich and famous. And so he's got to make it to that appointment. So he decides to leave the swamp. He meets Fozzie at the El Slizo Cafe, which is owned by James Coburn. Which is pretty great. And there are about 15 really famous 1970s people in the El Slizo Cafe. And we'll get around to that later. So Fozzie, he's got an act at the El Slizo, but it's not going well. So he agrees to go with Kermit. And they start traveling. John, do we want to talk about their travels now or should we save that to later? We can save that to later. Anyway, so who do they run into? They run into Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem at a church. And I'm getting ahead of myself because first they run into Doc Hopper, and Doc Hopper and the guy from What's Up Doc, they want Kermit to sell frog legs, which is kind of gross to like have a living frog do that. And then Kermit makes like this comment about, all I see is millions of frogs on crutches, but I don't understand how that works unless Doc Hopper's only taking one leg per frog.
Well, I mean, you could be on crutches and still, I mean, like have stumps or something. But I mean, it's just this gruesome. I think that's one of the most hilarious lines. Kind of, it's a really dark humor because it's like Kermit's like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe how many frogs are on crutches in his vision." Like that's the worst way Kermit envisions it. He doesn't imagine all the frogs dying.
They still have
served in the restaurant.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So anyway, Fozzie almost takes the $500 offered, and I guess he says, "Would you take a bear in a frog suit?" Anyway, they escape from Doc Hopper, but Doc Hopper won't take no. They meet Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem, and they soup up their car, make it look completely different, which works for about 2 minutes. So they evade Doc Hopper again. Then they run into literally Gonzo, who's a plumber, but was on his way to Bombay, India to become an actor, which I know is a joke in this movie, but I think the film industry in Bombay, like Bollywood, is just as big as Hollywood. So anyway.
Yeah, it's almost like the joke is that the people in the movie don't get the joke. Or they say it's a joke. Yeah, it's just like they make the joke happen because like, oh, you're silly. But it's like, oh, you know what? Gonzo probably would have been really big in India.
So yeah. they get rid of their cars because they have Gonzo's plumber car too. They buy a car from Milton Burrow. Then they take a stop at the Bogan County Fair. And there's where they meet Miss Piggy, who instantly falls in love with Kermit. I think we're supposed to understand that Kermit does too, but she's way more open about that. Anyway, they're heading to Hollywood. She's coming along. They stop at a wonderful restaurant, and it's got to be Idaho, because I don't know why any other state is serving Idaho champagne. They're served by Steve Martin, who's so wonderful in this film. And I think he had already done his Muppet Show episode before this. I think most of these actors had. But anyway, Miss Piggy leaves for a phone call. Kermit goes to find her after meeting Rolf. Rolf's just about my favorite Muppet, by the way. He's great. We find that Doc Hopper's caught up with Kermit again. He's got a guy who's going to turn his brain into mush. I'm pretty sure he's like a Nazi scientist. Right? Mm-hmm. Is that what we're supposed to understand, that he's like an escaped Nazi scientist?
Is it Mel Brooks?
It's Mel Brooks. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. Yeah. Mel Brooks as a Nazi.
Yeah.
So Miss Piggy saves the day. She frees herself. She frees Kermit. And so the machine was supposed to like just give Kermit a lobotomy. But when Mel Brooks gets stuck in the machine, he turns into a frog. It's right. Weird.
It doesn't make sense.
Sense. Anyway, Piggy gets a call from her agent and she's gone. We don't see her for a while.
That was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
She just hi-yahs everybody and then she gets a call from the agent. It's like, okay, book it. And then she goes, goodbye. And then she bounces off. You know, like the way Muppets walk off stage with that bouncy walk is just so funny. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, they not very much further down the road, they run into her again. She's hitchhiking, and she gets back in the car with them. And what's the next stop? So is it the ghost town? Right?
I think so. I did not do a good job of marking all the points. That would have been a good way to organize the movie now that I think about it. I should have put the points down.
Anyway, their car breaks down. Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem, they meet up with them and help them out. But Doc Hopper is hot on their trail, and Kermit says, okay, we're going to have a showdown in this place, and it's a couple hours away from L.A. They say that they're 2 hours away from Hollywood. So I'm going with Pioneer City, California, as a ghost town that is 2 hours away from L.A. So they meet there, and Kermit hopes to talk Doc Hopper down. Doc Hopper has a new henchman called Walker.
I wrote Snake Walker.
Snake Walker. What does Snake Walker do? Kill frogs. Anyway, Kermit is not able to talk him down, but Animal takes grow pills that he gets at Bunsen and Beaker's store, and he scares the bad guys away for good, I guess, this time. They all make it to Hollywood. They get into the office where Orson Welles plays Mr. Lord, I think is the guy's name, who Kermit says, hey, we really want to be movie stars. And he says, okay, prepare standard contract for frogs wishing to be rich and famous. So they get their chance at a movie. It looks like they have put together like a 40-second script. So their movie, while not very long, is probably budget-friendly. And then everything goes haywire, but a hole breaks through the roof, and the rainbow comes down, and they sing this beautiful ending song. And then Jack's not his name, Jack's his job, breaks through the movie screen, and we're back in the theater, and that's the end of the movie. Hmm. The Muppet Movie.
Lovely. Okay, now do you want to talk about the geography now, or do you want to talk about something
else? We'll just
get
it out of the way. Okay. So, because I thought for sure someone would have just done this, right? And so I Googled it, and no one's done this. But
you've done it.
I've now done it. So from Georgia, because he's in a swamp in Georgia, from Georgia to Hollywood is a 36-hour drive on today's freeways, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It's like 2,300 miles. Okay. So that's a drive, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. There's two possible ways, because what we know is that from the song that they go through Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And then after Rhode Island, they go through Saskatchewan. So here's the argument. Sure. Are they in Saskatchewan, Quebec, or are they in the province of Saskatchewan? If it's Quebec,
Saskatchewan, Quebec is spelled slightly differently.
It is, but I don't know how they spell it. He just says it.
Well, yeah, but in the I always watch movies with captions, and I happen to know that the captions spell it just like the province.
Oh, well, then we'll throw that right out. Okay. Let's see. So here's okay.
So they've already driven 2,300 miles, right?
Okay. So anyway, Rhode Island to Regina, Saskatchewan, back to Bogan County, which is apparently in Arkansas, then to Boise, and then to Hollywood after, you know, Pioneer Town, then Hollywood. This is a 7,700-mile trip that takes 116 hours if you don't stop driving for a second.
Well, they're being chased the whole time.
They are being chased.
You obviously take the longest possible route when you're trying to escape somebody.
I'm amazed at how many times Doc was just around the corner.
I know.
out of the way.
Oh, man. So anyway, that's the geography. So
that's excellent.
Yeah, what do you guys want to talk about for this movie?
Well, I just really quickly want to mention this is I haven't seen this movie in like 30 years, and it was kind of more magical and fun than I remember. But like one thing watching it this time, I just have to mention, it's like the way it's structured and set up, the way Kermit the Frog is singing about you know, the Rainbow Connection, you know, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit more about, you know, how there are lovers and dreamers out there, and he wants to be a part of them, and he wants to express that, and he wants to make as many people as possible happy in the world. And when he sees that there's an opportunity to do something in Hollywood, he's like, okay, this is my opportunity to do some good in the world. And the whole time on his journey to do the most amount of good for the most amount of people, he is plagued by a person who wants him to, I guess, just in short, sell out and harm people or harm other frogs. Or
harm, you know, a lot of frogs.
Yeah, yeah. Frogs. And so I thought it was interesting, you know, because, you know, it's like the Muppet movie. The Muppets somehow, I guess, I don't know the behind the scenes of how corrupt the Muppets are and, you know, what kind of drug problems they had and, you know, well, if they abuse interns or whatever.
You got Zoot, right? Zoot is – he's totally stoned the whole time. So.
Right. But, I mean, for the most part, it's just like, okay, they built a career out of, you know, bringing happiness and joy to people.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that the movie, like the conflict of the movie is, okay – everybody out there who wants to be an artist and who wants to perform and, you know, wants kind of the glory of Hollywood, you can have that very easily if you give in to the wrong people. And so, like, actually making it work and making it happen, you know, takes a lot of diligence in avoiding, you know, Doc Hopper's selling outism and murder of frogs.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I took out of the movie anyway.
Okay. So by the way, who's your favorite Muppet? Mine is Stan the Eagle. I love Stan the Eagle so much.
I really love Stan the Eagle. I'm a little bit partial to the band member who looks like what's her name?
Janice?
Yeah, Janice. I really like Janice. I really liked Fozzie Bear in the movie. I think the fact that you get to spend the most amount of time with him, even though I kind of think it's annoying that, you know, he's a comedian, but he doesn't actually say one funny thing.
Right.
but, so, you know, I kind of feel for him, though. I think because most of the movie you're with Fozzie Bear, you kind of like him.
Yeah. So, oh, man, I completely spaced on what I was going to say. Anyway, I'll keep going.
Eric, do you have a favorite Muppet?
I don't have much fondness or nostalgia for the Muppets at all. So they were just kind of this weird thing that happened to be on sometimes. So watching this, I don't think I've ever seen this movie all the way through before this week. And watching it from start to finish, it was pretty rough for me. So I did not enjoy it very much. So,
oh, hey, that's okay.
I don't have a particular Muppet that I, you know,
that you hate the least.
Yeah, I guess Fozzie Bear I hate the least, but they're all pretty equally despicable.
Well,
the professor, I think I like a lot.
The professor. When you say professor, you mean Mr. Bunsen?
Yes, with the no eyes. the he's one got who such like a good when, line. When someone mentioned, I think it was that line, the apartment line.
Yeah, we'll save it.
Okay, yeah, we'll save that. Okay.
All right. So I remember what I was going to say. So Floyd in the band, his full name is Sergeant Floyd Pepper. So,
clever.
Yeah,
so that's the one. That's the one.
So Miss Piggy, I've never liked Miss Piggy.
No, yeah.
And Miss Piggy is voiced by Yoda, which is interesting.
Yes.
But like her hair, I don't know how to put this. Like Miss Piggy's hair is gorgeous. She has great hair.
I know. You think that you kind of like you can see kind of the appeal. You know, like Kermit, you understand, you know, how Kermit is attracted to her, how she's like doing the karate on all those people and her hair is just flowing gorgeously, you know, during all the karate moves.
But is it a wig? There's rumors. Is it a wig?
It might be a wig.
None of the other Muppets have like human hair.
I know.
Weird animal bodies. So
yeah, essentially she's like a pig with, I guess she's wearing a wig, right? But it's a weird character because she's like this voluptuous, curvy pig.
Well, she's got like pig cleavage. And it's like, what is that? What message is that sending? I don't know what they're supposed to think.
That cleavage is so bizarre. It's like someone just drew like a seagull on her chest, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So do you guys want to try and name as many cameos as we can real quick? There are so many.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start with Telly Savalas.
Oh, I knew that was good. I was going to name him as my favorite Muppet. He was like right up there. okay, so and we've said Mel Brooks,
Milton Berle, Steve Martin,
yeah.
What's her name? Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn, yeah, she's the Myth Girl, right?
Yes.
No, that's Bernadette Peters.
Bernadette Peters is the Myth Girl. Myth Girl.
Yeah.
Yes, Miss. Yes.
Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor. Bob Hope. Yeah. Yep.
The big one, of course, is Edgar Bergen, Candace Bergen's father, who was a famous puppeteer.
When you said the big one, I thought you meant Orson Welles.
Orson Welles, yeah.
he's the largest one, Orson
Literally, Welles. Yeah. Dom DeLuise
is one. I have to talk – okay, have you guys heard about this thing about Edgar Bergen and his like puppet dummy Charlie Bergen? Apparently Candace Bergen – was raised with Charlie Bergen as her brother.
I need that to be true.
He was just like a sibling in the family, and he was always around. And so, like, that's my brother, Charlie Bergen, I guess, you know, because like her father treated him as a son. And I think, by the way, this is what Katie told me. She was pretty upset when Charlie Bergen got the bulk of the estate when Edgar Bergen died.
Okay, so I do want to mention, I'm pretty sure Miss Piggy killed one of the people when they like when she was karateing people. I think there was a death there. But is that all the cameos you guys can think of? It seems like there were more, and I'm sure there's more, but those were the big ones.
Oh,
you mentioned like Mr. Larrabee from What's Up, Doc?
What's his name? It's like Adrian Peterson or something, or.
It's not. Oh shoot! I recognize his name. It's Austin Pendleton.
Austin Pendleton. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's see. We mentioned Milton. Okay. Big Bird is a cameo, right? Bird, because he's like a Sesame Street Muppet rather than you know anything else. And let's see. I put Orson Welles. I think Snake Walker. Oh, Elliot Gould was a cameo.
Elliot Gould. Yeah. Was he the guy that was the MC at the what do you call it? The beauty contest, right?
Yeah, the beauty contest that Miss Piggy wins is Elliot Gould. Yeah. Yes.
Well, very good. So this was like the family-friendly comedic version of Towering Inferno for like 70s all-stars.
Exactly. Yes. It's amazing that – well, you're right, though. It's not that amazing that they got everybody. It's almost as if – like, was it in their Muppet Show contract? It's like, okay,
if we're doing a movie. Yeah.
It's like, you know, show up in Saskatchewan in a month, and
Saskatchewan. Yeah.
I wonder if just the show treated these celebrities really great, right? Because everybody seems to have fond memories of doing it. And so then it was like, hey, will you come do the movie? And they're like, yeah, no problem, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
And movie.
Okay, so next, there's an episode called, a police squad called A Broken Promise. but then a substantial gift pops up on the screen. Okay, so Eric, I believe this is yours. Do you remember what happens in this episode of Police Squad?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good memory. Feel free to jump in if I'm skipping over anything too pertinent. It starts off basically they're in a bank, and the cashier lady that works there, secretary kind of lady, asks the presumably the bank manager for a loan to cover her like orthodontia bills or something, orthodontist bills that she's trying to pay, and he's like, no, I'm not giving you a loan. So I think she may have pre-planned this, but she goes over to her desk and takes out one of her two guns and shoots him, and then a customer comes in and she shoots the customer too, or was it vice versa?
I think it was vice versa.
She shoots both of them anyway.
Yeah.
And then plants
twice. She shoots Ed twice.
Yeah. And then she plants the gun that she shot the banker guy with on the customer and kind of then runs out screaming to frame him as though he shot the that was trying to rob the bank and shot the bank manager guy, and then she shot him. So they call police squad, of course. And so as they're investigating this, what am I missing? What's next? I feel like I'm skipping over something.
Was one of the man who, okay, because when they come and see her, or maybe it was someone else, but there's a line in here where they say to some lady, "We would have come earlier, but your husband wasn't dead yet."
Yes.
Yes. When they go to talk to the widow.
The widow.
Mr. Twice was the guy's name. They go talk to his wife, and she's crying, and she's all upset. And he says, "Sorry, we would have come earlier, but your husband wasn't dead yet."
I'm trying to remember how they solved it. I can't remember how it's solved.
They go to the orthodontist's office to, like, check her records.
Right, and find that she owed money.
She owed money, but she paid it the day of the robbery.
Right, yeah, that day or the next day or something like that.
Like, the actual police work is very difficult to remember.
Which, yeah, it's definitely an afterthought at best.
Yeah.
So
part of
it ends in a shootout where they're, like, 2 feet away from each other.
Yeah. Oh, well, once he finds out that he goes to the shoeshine guy who says, like, "Hey, maybe look at the cashier lady there," right? Be like, and that's what kind of tips him off. The shoeshine boy guy tells him he should look at the cashier at the bank. So then he has to go reenact it by killing like 18 different people, shooting them at different
people. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then he realizes that the angle of the bullet that killed the cashier came from lower down, and it couldn't have been from in front of the counter where the guy was. And so that's kind of his smoking gun. And then I think he goes and confronts her, and she just basically admits it.
Yeah, well, he takes off her several wigs because all these people before then.
He wigs her. Yeah. Maybe one of these went to this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, but I mean, it happens off screen, but, you know, he gets the tip from the shoeshine boy, he goes to the orthodontist's office, you know, to get that information. But it's something else that happens off screen that he only mentions at the end of the episode is that he got a little hunchback at the office.
That's right.
Which actually was a hunchback who works at the office. You told him the tip. Yeah.
But it ended up in a shootout, right? This is that right episode where they're each on one side of the same garbage can.
And they're shooting back and forth. That's right.
Yes.
Shooting back and forth at each other from three feet away.
And then they start throwing several guns at each other. And they run out of bullets.
There's two things from this show that weren't in the movie. One's Al, right? I don't remember Al being in the movie.
The tall guy?
Yeah, was he in the movie?
Yeah.
No, he was in the movie. Okay, yeah, they used the same joke.
Then shows what I know. But the big one, like, that I cannot believe the movie didn't do this. I cannot believe the movie didn't end with the freeze screen.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was
that
so
that would have been amazing in the movie because it would have been, like, 5 minutes longer.
Yeah. If they ran it through the entirety of the credits, that would have been great.
Yeah. They needed to do that. But I mean, the good thing about Police Squad is they did it for the entirety of the whole run of Police Squad. Yep. They end with the same joke where they just freeze on the credits, but it's just the actors freezing instead of the freeze frame. And they did it for the, I mean, as far as I know, every single episode of Police Squad, they do that. Six episodes.
And so in some of them, like, everyone tries to stay frozen. And in one of them, like, one of the cops tries to come over and pose with them several times. But in one of the episodes, like, the bad guy gets away while they're in freeze frame mode, right? But so the TV show was only six episodes, and only four episodes aired, and they just they finished filming six, and the last two didn't hit the air until much later. But so it's weird because I read an article that basically said, I think it was Matt Groening said that it just was, the humor was ahead of its time, that a TV audience wasn't ready for it, which is weird because this show came after Airplane, and Airplane was wildly successful. So why would this show have not worked?
I've heard other interviews say this. It's like in Airplane worked because you're in a dark theater and everybody's staring at the screen. But at this point, television, especially a show like Police Squad, it's kind of like Dragnet or whatever. That's what you did while you ironed the clothes, you know? And so you're looking down. Like, if you tuned into Police Squad, you actually think, you know, if you're not paying full attention to it, that it's just another police procedural. And so I think a lot of people just had no idea that, you know, the best half hour of their lives was passing them by. They were doing something while the TV was on in the room.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, so that's – I have lots more to say about this episode, but really quick, I'll mention it here. Did not make my guest star award, so I'll just mention it here. I read after I watched the episode that David Schwimmer, Ross of Friends, was one of the children in the weird orthodontic – machines at the orthodontist office. So a bit of trivia. Yeah, a bit of actor trivia for a substantial gift, the broken promise. Eric, now for the big one. What happens in The Naked Gun?
All right. The Naked Gun. Sorry, I wasn't sure which one I was doing, so I'm a little out of sorts here. So, sorry. You guys want to help guide me along here?
Sure.
O.J. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson plays, what's the character?
Nordberg. Oh, that's the Nordberg. Opening is on the ship, right?
Yeah. So there's a Nordberg on the TV show, and it's not O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, I was looking for Nordberg, and he was suspiciously gone.
He's in the second half of the... of the season. Anyway.
Oh, he does come into the show.
He does come in, yep.
But a different Nordberg.
He's an Italian looking guy. Anyway.
Yeah, the Nordberg the show, he's the guy who walks into the freeze frame, right? And attempts to pose in the
tries to pose frame. With him, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So it starts he's on out by some sort of docks on some sort of ship. He's trying to bust some criminals on a ship of some sort of drug bust or something, smuggling ring. Whatever it is.
Is this some kind of bust? Yes, very impressive. That's from a different episode.
And he gets shot a whole bunch of times and falls off the boat into the ocean and is presumably dead. But we later find out he's not dead. He's just very badly wounded and in the hospital. Let's see, where do we go from there?
Drebin goes and visits his boss, who is Khan Noonien Singh from Star Trek II.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Why did they have to replace the boss? I thought the guy in the TV show was just fine. Anyway.
No. Not the police officer. No, the Ludwig, the villain, when he goes to Ludwig's office because...
Oh, yeah. You're talking about...
Because he's in charge of the docks. Yeah.
Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah,
oh, right. Man. He's the most macho man alive.
Yeah. He goes to and he's trying to figure out what happened, right? Get to the bottom of what happened to his partner, I guess, is what Nordberg's supposed to be. We don't really see them together at the beginning, but it's implied later that they're partners. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to get to the bottom of that.
Eric, you're so brave. I don't remember much of this plot either. He beats up a bunch of terrorists at one point.
No, you're fine.
That's the very beginning. No, the thing is, well, Ricardo Montalban sets him up with his secretaries, like, give Drebin everything you need. And so that's where, you know, so then he starts dating this girl who's like actually the secretary of the main bad guy. And as far as he knows, the bad guy doesn't do anything bad until, you know, he discovers everything in his office when he searches his office
and burns it down.
and burns the office down. Yeah.
Yes.
So the bad guy plot is to kill the Queen of England who's coming to a baseball game, right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what he discovers. Yeah.
Right. He just wants to kill her because she's coming to a baseball game, I presume. So he's very patriotic and feels like we can't.
Well,
can't sully our American pastime.
It's nothing that funny. Well, he's hired by some other shady figure. He's like, okay. I'm going to hire you to kill the queen. And so he's like, oh, I have the perfect way because I can hypnotize people into killing people.
Oh, yeah. Right. He gives people like Manchurian candidate watches.
Right. Yes. I couldn't just hypnotize the queen to kill herself. That'd be too simple. So I have to.
Oh, man. When the police
chief. Well, he has
chief,
to give her a watch.
When the police chief carries. Does he carry the queen out of the stadium and it's just like a giant stuffed doll and he's just flinging her around?
It's not the police chief, and it's a okay. You guys need to watch this movie again. It's when Ludwig, the villain of the movie, is carrying Priscilla Presley.
So Drebin tries to intervene by pretending to be the umpire, right?
Because the tip is that one of the baseball players,
is going to kill the queen somehow.
So he dresses up as an umpire so he can search everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time a batter comes up to bat, he pats him down and is searching up.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to figure out who's got a gun, because there's no other way to kill somebody other than with a gun.
So, he also becomes a celebrity as the umpire because he does his umpire dance every time he calls a strike.
Yeah. Yeah, he's trying to figure out who the player is that's going to kill the queen. Can't find him. And then gets in basically a big fight with he has to drag the game out, right? So he keeps calling everything a ball because it's supposed to happen by the end of the seventh inning or something.
I think
so
during the stretch.
As long as the inning doesn't end, the seventh inning stretch. So if the inning doesn't end, the queen can't be killed, and so he's just going to walk everybody forever until he figures out who's the murderer, right? And so then they get in a big fight. All the managers come out and they all start fighting with each other. He hits the little magic button to activate the watch that puts the baseball player into murder mode. Is that a real baseball player? Anybody?
Reggie Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Way
before. Too early for me.
It's a big I don't know baseball, but like,
I recognize the name for sure. Stuff. Yeah. So when... But one of the flaws in the mind control technology is that when you take over somebody's brain, they have to announce the evil mission that you've given them. He starts walking very slowly, lifts up like third base and takes a gun out from under it and says, "Must kill the queen," over and over again as he slowly marches toward her. As he's getting there, Frank Drebin realizes what's going on. And so he tries to use his magic cufflinks to shoot Reggie Jackson, but misses and shoots a fat lady up on the upper deck, and she falls over and smashes him. And that's how the plan is thwarted. And then evil bad guy tries to take off with the lady, and they go running up the stairs, and then he chases after him. He catches up to him and then shoots him with his other cufflink, and they're like, "Oh, you killed him." And he's like, "Oh, no, he'll just be passed out for a couple of minutes." And then he trips over the ledge and falls to the ground, where he's run over by a truck and then a steamroller and then a marching band all proceeds to run him over. That's it, right? That's pretty much it. What am I missing? I'm missing
the very, very, very last thing. This isn't super important, but when he falls in, his deactivation goes on and his secretary gets activated as an assassin.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
But she is overcome because he's like, "Jane, define love." You know, it's kind of like Star Trek. and so, like, love overcomes, and then, you know, and then the cop and the girl are together, and then O.J. Simpson rolls down also rolls off and bounces like into the field, goes flying, probably dies.
Probably dies. You could put that in your best death if you want to, because I'm pretty sure he's dead. So
he's in Naked Gun 2.5, of course. But
okay, so I want to talk about Frank's version of the Star Spangled Banner. I think the best line is at the end where he sings "In the Home of the Land."
In the home of the land. That's not quite the best line. I'll get to it later.
That we still had a flag is also pretty good.
Yeah. No, but yeah, we didn't mention that, but somehow that was a pretty good moment because he dresses up as the guy who sings the national anthem. Then he dresses up as the umpire. And then when he saves the day at the end, some guy yells, "Hey, it's Enrico Palazzo."
But we have to point out that there was no freeze frame at the end credits.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty upsetting.
Or at least the credits, more than a fraction of a second, right?
There were some good things in the credits. I'll get to those later as well. But one thing I want to point out in the credits is that it lists all the actors. There are two names listed in the credits, and it says two people deleted from the fireworks scene is how they're credited. So it actually listed the deleted people, which I've never seen a movie do.
So a couple things. Leslie Nielsen is surprisingly fit, right? But before, like right before him and is it Priscilla? What's the Presley girl's name?
Priscilla Presley, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right before they put on their sleeping bags for safe sex, like he takes off his shirt and not too bad. Not too bad.
He does a somersault too.
I kind of thought that as I was watching this movie, I'm like, oh, this could have been one of our like father issue movies, but they're actually only like 12 or 13 years apart. Their age difference isn't that much. I guess she's older than she looks.
What?
Yeah, what
really?
Is he just one of those like premature white hair guys, like Jay Leno kind of like,
or Steve Martin, who looked 50 he was 20?
Yeah, so he's, you know, I don't know what he is in this movie, 45 or 50 maybe, I don't know, but he just seems like he's always 70 because his hair's been white forever.
Yeah.
I have to verify this. Sorry, you guys keep talking, but I'm going to just write down these dates because I kind of don't believe you. Leslie Nielsen was born in 1926. Okay, so that's older than my parents.
I think she's born in the early 40s, but we're about to find out.
Okay. Priscilla Presley is – and it's funny. That's Elvis's wife, right? Not daughter. Wife, right?
Oh, yeah. Is it because their daughter is the one that dated Michael Jackson for a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
1945, so that's 19 years.
19 years. Yeah, not 25. It wouldn't have counted anyway.
Okay.
And so speaking
still,
of like...
Still shockingly close when you see them both together on screen.
Yeah. So
he's awfully friendly with his daughter.
Yeah. Okay, so we got to talk about this one thing, though, because this movie was released in 1988, and there's a scene in a chemical plant... That is the it's the Joker scene from Batman 1989.
It's making fun of the Joker scene, right? It's parodying the Joker scene, which came out a year later.
Which comes out a year later. It's like shot for shot. It's like exactly like it.
I can't explain that. I mean, is it possible that Batman was parodying Naked Gun?
I don't.
Or is there a common DP or something maybe that was just like, oh yeah, I know how to do this. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
I'll check that now. I'm just going to check to see if there's any connection between Naked Gun and... Okay, I'm just going to check the collaborations thing here, which I haven't looked at. I did look at this for our other thing. So we got... come on, computer work. Well, let me go into the field. Okay, the Naked Gun and Batman. 1989. Doing a search here. Three names. Okay, so we got Donald C. Rogers in the sound department, Neil S. Bulk in the sound department, and Dan Goldwasser, who graduated from Carnegie Mellon University. Doesn't say what he did, though. He must have been an advisor. Yeah, so I guess no connection. I think it must have just been a fun thing where they're like, let's just, they already blocked the scene out.
So this came out
in both movies. He was the chemical plant scene technical advisor on both.
Yeah, yes.
So this
official position.
This movie came out in December of '98. So when exactly did Batman come out?
It was that summer of '89. I remember Batman was a summer movie of '89.
Anyway, I don't know. I'm assuming that a movie like Batman probably required a lot more post production. So someone had to know something because there's just no way that's a coincidence. It's like that shot of the hand is identical.
Yeah.
June 1989.
Yeah. So like someone who made the Naked Gun saw a rough cut of the movie Batman and knew it was going to be a huge movie, and that was the last scene they made for Naked Gun, perhaps?
So, but the funny,
you would have had to see it a year in advance.
Yeah, the funny thing is, the people watching Naked Gun, they were not like, "Oh my gosh, it's the Batman scene!" It's the dozen people watching Batman who also had seen Naked Gun, who then said, "Holy cow, the Naked Gun scene!"
I mean, that's joke upon joke. That's very meta. It kind of reminds me of, like, I'm not a big fan of the movie Spaceballs, but there's a sequence in Spaceballs where, like, Princess, what's her name? It's Buttercup or something, right? Princess Daphne. They, you know, John Candy and the president from Independence Day, they save the princess, and it's Han Solo and Chewbacca, and then they land on the desert planet, and then they're wandering around. They're like, why are we carrying this stuff? And then they're like, oh, we're dropping your stuff. You have, like, too big of a wardrobe, and she has that big giant hair dryer. She's like, this is my princess stuff, you know, whatever. Right, and so that's, like, a joke, you know, because Spaceballs is parodying Star Wars, the movie that came out 10 years later. But then 10 years after that is when Phantom Menace came out, and they're stuck on Tatooine, and Qui-Gon Jinn says to Obi-Wan Kenobi, it's like, is there any money that we have so we can, you know, charter a ship or something? And Obi-Wan Kenobi says, we don't have very much. The Queen's wardrobe, maybe, that we can sell. We can probably sell the Queen's wardrobe, which I'm – wait, they were on the run. Why did the Queen
As she fled Naboo in an emergency situation, she grabbed her wardrobe.
Which is the joke that was made in Spaceballs 10 years earlier, that the princess packs a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, Spaceballs made fun of it before it even happened in the movie.
Man. Well, I think all this goes to just prove that time travel's real. It's real.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. So, Naked Gun. I like
that. I think you just did a better for Naked Gun. And I apologize.
Well, it's I think it's funny. I'll probably put a link to this in the show notes. But today I watched the Siskel and Ebert where they talk about the Naked Gun. They gave it two thumbs up, by the way. And Roger Ebert was in charge of introing the movie, and he's like, "How can I even talk? How can I even have a discussion about this movie? It's really funny. I laughed. There, that's my review. That's it. That's what he said." Like, how could we even have a serious discussion about what this movie is and what it's about? So I think it's fine, Eric. I think you done good on that.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where the plot just serves to set up the next punchline.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it does a good job.
So I want to talk here real quickly, getting serious about this.
Okay.
That my problem. I have a problem. So I don't think the humor in Police Squad is actually improved upon by a bigger budget or a longer runtime. And kind of what I found while watching every single episode of the TV show was by the last episode, I was kind of done with the humor. Like, it was fairly repetitive. Oh. And then I felt the same way in the movie Naked Gun. Like, it just, I don't know that. I feel like that kind of humor, and maybe it's just me and my taste in humor, but that kind of humor is really good in smaller doses, and it gets mm-hmm. kind of dumb in an hour and 45 minute long movie. So anyway, that's my my two cents. Well,
all right, how should I reprimand you for this? Well, go ahead, Eric. Go ahead, dig your grave.
No, I mean I don't completely disagree. I think small doses, it serves that kind of humor better. And so I think in a TV show format where you're doing, you know, half an hour once a week or whatever, I think it would be super effective, right? I think the same thing is true of even like The Simpsons, right? The TV show works really great because you don't have to really have a whole lot of plot. You just have to have a couple of different scenes with some good jokes and, you know, some sort of through line to tie it all together. Whereas when you try to make a narrative film, there's a lot more pressure to have a plot and a, you know, different ABC stories and all these different things going on. And there has to be some big giant arc that happens throughout the movie. And I think it takes away from some of the jokes a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying I don't like the movie, because the movie's pretty darn funny. And there's some parts that I really enjoyed. And I think one of the things where where we had the harbor master that was like the informant instead of Jimmy the shoeshine boy. And I thought, oh, they're not bringing Jimmy back. But I thought that scene was really good where they started exchanging money with each other because they started asking each other questions.
Yeah.
And it's a good remix of the shoeshine.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my stupid unpopular take.
I do agree with you. I don't think – because I've done this before. I proudly own the entire box set DVD set of Police Squad, right? All one disc. Yeah. Every episode fits on a single disc, and I proudly own it. And I've noticed, you know, because I've shown Police Squad to people before, and we watched this first episode. It's like, oh, this is dynamite. You watch the second and third episode. By the middle of the third episode, you are kind of tapped out. I think this type of humor, it's difficult to binge. It's kind of being like a bag of Sour Patch Kids. It's just so delicious. But if you eat another bag of Sour Patch Kids right after that, you're just like, oh gosh, this is kind of. I can't handle this right now. Yeah.
Please tell me that the box set of Police Squad is like 4 inches thick, so it looks like there's like 12 DVDs, and then you open it and there's just one in there.
I wish I could tell you that. They dropped the bomb there. That would be like,
they definitely did.
So one of the great jokes in the Police Squad episode is the stretcher, as they're walking into the building, the stretcher that's coming out, and then they walk
like
in, the stretcher, it's like the 30-foot long stretcher.
Well, I will say, let me mention this, because I thought you were going to say this, because this is something about a lot of people, if you listen to, they mentioned this on Movies That Made Me a couple times. I there's no way I'd be able to figure out the episode where they said this, but I agree with it. There's something lost in the Naked Gun from the TV show, because one of the things about the TV show is it's just how it adheres to the idea that we are not making jokes. Like everybody in this show knows that they're in a police procedural and they are committed to their lives like that. There are lots of moments in Naked Gun where it's like he kind of looks at the camera like, what? Or like a character is like, wah, wah. You know, there's a little bit more winking in the Naked Gun, which kind of takes away from the purity of where the show started. And, you know, maybe the show deserved to only have 6 episodes because they reuse so many jokes and everything. And they reuse so many jokes in the movie, too. So I guess we deserve.
What was the time difference between when the show aired and when the movie came out?
82, 88. I think it's 6 years.
Okay. Yeah. So, I wonder if, you know, it's like one of those things where it kind of got revived, where there was a group of people that really liked it at the time. You know, we see a lot more of this now with the internet, where people can kind of get this grassroots support for something to come back, like Arrested Development and things like that, that go away, and then there's a whole bunch of support for it after the fact. But I wonder if at the time, I feel like I kind of agree with what you guys were saying earlier, where at the time, I think people didn't get that it was supposed to be funny because they do play it so straight, even though there's these kind of sight gags that are going on throughout it, that everybody plays it very straight. And then in the movie, you know, there's no way to accidentally wander into the theater and not know what you're really getting into, right? It's very obvious what it is. Whereas if you're flipping through channels in 1982, you could come across this and, you know, your grandpa wouldn't know what it was and think it's just some police procedural. And then, you know, the joke is kind of on him versus for him, you know what I mean? And so I think that's a little bit of the magic of the TV show versus the movie. Everybody's in on it by that point. Yeah. So
I think also a little bit to John's earlier point, like the humor gets tapped out, that like in the first episode of Police Squad, there's a joke in that episode which is just made me laugh harder than just about anything that we watched in this whole podcast. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of Police Squad, I've heard that joke 10 times.
Yeah, it's there is the, you know, I would love, I guess there are only 3 guys who do this, you know, maybe it is just so hard to like mine that humor because it's like so confined. They have like such a strict reservoir. They can't just tell wah-wah jokes all the time. But if there is a book, if someone out there could lead me to a book, like an oral history or something, because I would devour this book. About the type of humor between Airplane and the Naked Gun, and why they made the concessions they did, and why Naked Gun is a little bit more, it's a bit more mainstream, a bit more general in the type of humor, and Airplane is so specific and strict in the type of humor. And, you know, what decisions they made between this to Top Secret to Naked Gun, I would really devour that because I'm really curious about the decisions they make.
I just barely put that together. This is the same writing, directing crew that did Top Secret.
Top Secret, yeah. Top Secret. We haven't mentioned Top Secret. Yeah. If anybody wants to listen to another podcast, we were on the Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye, where we discussed the movie Top Secret, which is an excellent movie. And I think since Top Secret kind of was considered a failure, I think they wanted to be a little bit more safe with Naked Gun. That's another theory I have. So great movie though, Top Secret.
Sure, I'm just blanking on it. Is there some modern day equivalent of this? I mean, what is the closest thing we have now to this sort
of
humor,
I would
right?
say, I mean, it's not modern day, but the Scary Movie franchise is kind of like this. The third, I don't know if you know this, but the third Scary Movie was directed by Zucker.
Yeah,
one of these guys, one of the three guys who did it.
Okay. I was going to say, I was thinking a little bit of Austin Powers has some of this stuff in there to some degree. But yeah, okay. Scary Movie. Yeah, that's fair.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So the Naked Gun, that was a very serious conversation.
Oh man. Huh. All right, John, you ready to bring us home with Paddington?
Paddington for Prime Minister. the cartoon. Now, okay. I'll just say it right now. Okay. First of all, I'm about to speak for 5 minutes about the TV episode Paddington for Prime Minister. It's available on HBO or wherever I watched it, and 5 minutes is more than it deserves, even if I talk about how terrible it is. Now,
so I wish we had been able to watch the old like stop motion Paddington, but you can't find a photo.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Did, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, this was more stop motion than a stop motion thing. Yeah. We watched, you know, in my house we watched, you know, about 2 minutes of the stop motion, and it was very charming and delightful and very trippy, and I kind of got weirded out because Paddington is in stop motion, but everybody else is kind of like in 2D cutout cartoon kind of thing. And it was just a little bit, but it was just so refreshing, and it was just so kind of lovely of a world. Paddington for Prime Minister is, you know, Hanna-Barbera, where they just took, you know, a He-Man episode and then they pasted like Hanna-Barbera's face or Paddington's face over Teela or whatever, and they just used the same cells. Okay, so first of all, Paddington, he lives in London, and he goes and hangs out, and he sees a guy giving a speech, and then everybody mistakes Paddington for a politician, and Paddington is like, hey, I'm part of the Don't Know Party. He gets a lot of support. Everybody's going to vote for Paddington. And then the Prime Minister is threatened, and so he nearly has Paddington assassinated, but then he decrees that Paddington is the Minister of Marmalade.
Buys off Paddington with a position in government.
Yes, yes. So yeah. Paddington gets bribed into politics, and that's the lesson.
Well, we can't move past the fact that Paddington has mind-controlled laser eyes.
Yes, yes. It's Paddington. First of all, he's voiced by Cobra Commander. And,
oh, my goodness.
And he has heat vision eyes. At one point, I guess Paddington, it gets taken away by a car, and he's hooked onto the Prime Minister's car, and he says the line, "I know bears are supposed to be determined, but this is ridiculous." I didn't know bears were determined. I don't know how ridiculous that is. Like, what is that? It's every aspect of this episode is cut and paste. It's like literally cut and paste, like cut and paste paper, Paddington things. Like, that's how bad the animation is. The lines are so dismal and drab and just it's one of those. It's Roy, I think you mentioned this is a kind of a dream, a little dream. Kind of thing, the Paddington Prime Minister thing.
This was so bad. His voice is awful. Like, I guess Cobra Commander didn't really change his voice much.
Right.
There's nothing good about this cartoon.
I mean, I guess there's just the whole thing that it's adorable that Paddington loves marmalade, which so we're going to talk about this. But I watched this and then I watched the movie and I had a real hard time with the movie because I'd watched this cartoon.
Right.
And every time there was like a mention of him liking marmalade, I was like, that stupid cartoon bear. Right.
No, that's a good point. Okay. Before we get to the movie, though, I also have to mention that Paddington is being investigated by a Romulan newspaper reporter. Who gets caught up in newspaper works and stuff and possibly dies. But what you're saying, Roy, is perhaps because we're doing this gimmick here where we watch an episode of the TV show. Okay, and here's the thing I meant to say. This episode should be invalidated because, yes, Paddington as a concept, kind of like Winnie the Pooh, is based on a bunch of books. But if anything – the Paddington 2 movie is based on those stop motion 70s things. So it's probably unfair that, you know, we're watching side Paddington here and not the original.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like motion Paddington.
The cartoon predates the movie, but it's not based on it. They're both inspired by the same.
Yeah. So, and I understand that, but I can't help. It's impossible for me to have to, maybe I need to watch Paddington 2 again in like a year, but the cartoon tainted me towards the movie, and it was hard to overcome.
It's impossible to have watched that cartoon and it not be for some legitimate reason. Just watch it for purely pleasure would not be allowable.
The cartoon, like that was the success of the cartoon because it was like just shown in classrooms by drunk teachers.
Yeah.
It's just something to have.
What I was hoping would happen is the cartoon would be
to get the kids to want to do homework, maybe. Yeah. Oh, can we do math?
I was hoping the cartoon, like being so bad, would make the movie so much better because of the contrast, but I just kept getting reminded of the cartoon.
That's what I have to ask. So my question to you is, because we did this dumb gimmick where we had to watch all of the other TV shows, but it's not a dumb gimmick, by the way, because the TV shows were delightful for the most part. That means that you're probably misranking Paddington 2 because it was unfair to the movie Paddington 2 that you
– It was unfair.
Yeah.
And okay. I do have some awards that are for Paddington 2. And because I feel like – I don't know if you guys watched the Ewan McGregor, Christopher Robin. I'm not a huge Winnie the Pooh fan, but I thought that movie was just like adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good.
And I loved it, right? And I feel like this is kind of the same vibe, except I didn't – before watching Christopher Robin, I didn't watch the Paddington cartoon. So,
right.
But this time I did watch the Paddington cartoon first.
That's good. Nice. Nice work.
Anyway, at the beginning of the movie, are they in Peru? Because he's supposed to be from Peru, but his parents who speak in a British accent don't look like they're sitting above a river in Peru.
They don't look like they're sitting – in the end credits it said it was filmed on location in Brazil and they don't mention Peru, so I think they just changed the origin story, therefore ruining my childhood by saying they're from Brazil rather than Peru and also speaking in English accents.
I did a deep dive to figure out what exactly darkest Peru is that a place? Is that a thing? Is that a saying that people use? And it's not.
Okay.
So apparently he was – the original plan was that he was going to be from darkest Africa. But then whoever the author is realized that there's no bears in Africa. And so he had to pick a different place. And so he picked Peru. And so that was the genesis of darkest Peru.
But are there lots of bears in Peru? I guess.
There are some bears, I guess.
Some bears.
As opposed to the – none.
I feel like you can't say darkest Africa. It sounds like a really bad thing to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had heard that before, right? Like that was that's definitely a thing that used to be said, right?
Yeah. It's a known phrase.
Yeah. And so I don't know exactly what it means, but you know, kind of the implication is the least explored, most kind of deepest jungle sort of thing, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway,
that's weird.
I guess he's from Brazil now.
What kind of person is like, okay, you know, I'm gonna talk about a jungle bear. Like, how do they get to? How do they leap to that?
I don't. Well, Baloo's a jungle bear.
Oh,
I guess
true.
Baloo is a jungle bear. I was listening to Blank Check podcast earlier. They were I can't remember what movie they were talking about, but one of them was talking about, like, they watched The Jungle Book and Disney's Tailspin at the same time, because Tailspin has all the Jungle Book characters in it, including Baloo, but in Tailspin they're all wearing clothes and they're all like, so they fly planes in a place called Cape Suzette, and it's the 30s. They, like, I think they talk about the year and everything. But then The Jungle Book is a movie that came out in the 50s, and like one of the hosts of Blank Check said, I remember having a serious panic attack breakdown, pleading with my parents, trying to get them to say, okay, when I was watching Tailspin, I'm like, has Baloo met Mowgli yet? Where in time is this? Where in the universe is this? What is going on? Like, it was just a child who could not process how Tailspin and The Jungle Book can coexist with all the same characters.
That's
funny. I'm like, that's a good point.
Speaking of which, it was just announced that they are doing a full-length film of Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers.
Did you guys see that?
Yeah, Will Arnett, Seth Rogen, and J.K. Simmons.
Really?
Well, John Mulaney and Andy Samberg are Chip 'n Dale.
Oh, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. So, that's what I forgot to mention when we talked about things we'd seen before. Murderville. You guys got to see Murderville.
You said you didn't like it.
Oh, yes, I did like it. I said I liked it. I liked it.
Oh, you told me that Alexis from Schitt's Creek looks so uncomfortable in that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hers is the worst episode because she looks like she wishes she was anywhere else.
Okay.
This is a show that can be found somewhere?
It's a show on Netflix, and the idea behind this show is that Will Arnett is a cop, and they're investigating a murder, and then they just have another TV star or comedian come on, but that person is given no script. And so Will Arnett just sets up, like, situations, and then – so Conan O'Brien is the first guest, and he does a pretty good job. And then maybe the best one is Marshawn Lynch, the football player.
Wow.
Like, he does a really good job. So
everybody has a script except one person?
Yeah, like the guest star has no script. So you got, like, Ken Jeong is one of the guest stars. What's her head? Stone. What's the girl's name? Sharon Stone. No, actually, I like the Sharon Stone episode the least because I think she, like, tries too hard. I don't know. But you got to watch it. It's really
Oh, that sounds good.
Okay, Murderville. Writing it down. Let's go watch
it. If you don't like it, it's only 20 minutes. So.
Okay, before I talk about...
So is Paddington for Prime Minister.
It's one of those...
Not all 20 minutes are equal.
Yeah, it's an unequal 20 minutes. So it's a good 20 minutes. Okay, good.
Yes, that's a good time.
By the way, Paddington for Prime Minister, I may as well mention it now. At the very end, I don't know, but it had a list of all the voice actors, and I just happened to write a few down. One is Russie Taylor, who is the voice of Sherry, Terry, and Martin in Simpsons. I recognize her name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh. And then, of course, Kenneth Mars is one of the voices, who another What's Up, Doc connection is Hugh Simon. So we've got Mr. Larrabee and Eunice and Hugh Simon all in this set of podcasts, this podcast set of movies. And then Tim Curry was also one of the voices. I don't know who Tim Curry voices, but he was in Paddington for Prime Minister, apparently. So Paddington 2. So I had I couldn't follow this movie in the slightest. Never saw Paddington 1. I only saw Paddington for Prime Minister. But it does start with a big flashback where Paddington's with Aunt Lucy, and it shows how Aunt Lucy and, you know, Paddington's uncle saved him in a river, you know, going over a thing, and so he owes his aunt his life, and they were planning on moving to Britain, but they decide to send their foster son Paddington to England instead.
Does that make sense to you that they just sent him?
Right. Because feels like maybe he was cramping their style.
I just don't understand why
we had all these vacations planned and stuff. So we're going to get rid of you.
I guess they only had one ticket, but then there were two.
But how are they both going to go? Yeah.
I don't know.
I had the same question.
Yeah. I guess they didn't want it. Maybe they had two tickets, but they're like, well, they didn't want to be a part themselves. So it's like, okay, we'll start him up with a new life, because this bear falls in rivers. And if you fall in the Thames, you're going to be fine.
It's Yeah.
You know, so it's like, let's send him to a river he can fall into. Like, this bear needs civilization. He's not like a camping kind of bear. So I guess that was the idea.
They couldn't just send him to like Lima. And like, yeah, you have to go to another continent.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
they really tried to get rid of him.
I guess, I mean, but they must have roots in England because they're
they got the accents.
Yeah,
and they're eating marmalade.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess there's all that. So okay. So anyway,
do you guys like marmalade? Have you had it?
Well, isn't it just jelly? I don't know.
It's orange jelly, but with pieces of peel as part. You're eating peel as well.
I do like peel more than most other people.
Yeah.
I'll have to
never
try
had it.
Yeah. Yeah. I assumed it was just, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, it's like just having a jelly sandwich because they're just having the sandwiches all the time. Okay. But anyway, Paddington, he's in London and he lives with a family there, and the family loves him and they're good people. Hugh Grant is in the neighborhood. Hugh Grant is a nice guy. He's an actor, but they, you know, the grandma, the family, she doesn't really like Hugh Grant. The point is, since we set up that Aunt Lucy is like one of the best bears ever, Paddington decides to buy her a pop-up book of, you know, London's famous sights, and that's at the local antique shop. And when Hugh Grant discovers that this pop-up book exists, Hugh Grant steals the pop-up book, and Paddington, he is trying to stop him, but he gets arrested instead. And even the antique shop owner, like, you'd think he, as long as the antique shop owner doesn't press charges against Paddington, he'd be fine, but I don't know how it works. The cops, they just want a scapegoat. They need to bump their numbers up, and so they're like, we don't have enough bears in prison. So they toss Paddington in prison. So Paddington makes friends with this guy named Knuckles in prison, who is the cook, and everybody fears Knuckles, but Paddington teaches him how to make marmalade, so now the prisoners do nothing but make marmalade.
Do you recognize Knuckles?
Knuckles is Brendan Gleeson, who is – he's in what? He's in, like, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I think he is. He's also – he's Hamish in Braveheart.
Oh, okay. Braveheart, sure. Yeah. And right. is that it? The Braveheart guy?
Yeah.
He's in a lot of stuff. He's in a lot of stuff.
He's a
big guy. He's like plays a lot of different characters. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, Paddington's foster family, they want to prove Paddington's innocence, and so they do a little bit of sleuthing. Somehow I can't remember the clues they come across, but you know, they kind of believe that Hugh Grant isn't who we think he is or who he purports to be. So they sneak into his house. They uncover evidence, you know, that he stole the pop-up book, and he's actually using the pop-up book because it's a treasure map, because some old gypsy lady hid a treasure. This is a big, weird, convoluted thing about the pop-up book. Okay.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so they're like, okay, yeah, we got him. But in doing so, in trying to clear Paddington's name, this was gut-wrenching. They forgot to visit Paddington in prison. And so Paddington thinks no one cares about him. And so he gives into prison peer pressure, and he escapes from prison. And there's this big, I assume Wes Anderson directed the prison escape scene. much of this movie. You know, actually, this movie is very Wes Anderson-y, although I kind of took to it better because Wes Anderson is way too Wes Anderson-y, but this is the right amount of Wes Anderson for me.
Personally. Yes.
Yeah. And so, anyway, he escapes from prison, and then they're like, we're flying to Peru or somewhere. I can't remember where they're flying. And he's like, no, you said you were going to help me clear my name. And they're like, sorry, this is the way it is, you know. You just got to understand the way it is. But Paddington, you know, he's like, let's just be nice to each other and be polite and everything will be okay. They're like, sorry, that's not the way it works. And so Paddington is on his own, and everything converges with Hugh Grant on a train. Sorry, we got this really, I'm making a few jumps here, but Hugh Grant's on a train and Paddington's family's trying to stop him, and Paddington's trying to stop him. And Hugh Grant almost gets away by throwing Paddington in a train car, sinking it into the sea, and Sally Hawkins, fresh off her stint as, having a sexual affair with a fish in Shape of Water,
She dives underwater. She tries to save Paddington, but she can't do it because he's all chained up in the door. But the escape prisoners, they decide to land the plane right there on the river, I guess in the Thames, and they help get Paddington out. Hugh Grant is caught, and he finds new life in prison because he doesn't need to steal treasure anymore to uphold his actory lifestyle. He becomes a famous actor in prison, and he gets all the prisoners to love song and dance.
So the main plot device, right, is at each location for the clues, there's like a letter, and it's out to be a musical note, and there's an organ he plays. And if he plays the notes in order, and we see it for one moment, this beautiful treasure chest full of treasure that whoever drew the book had collected, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like, it goes away, and we don't see the treasure again. But, yeah.
Seems like it wouldn't be too difficult to break into that organ, you know?
Yeah, just kind of break the pieces off and... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, but they don't do that. So I guess we never really get to the treasure, but everyone's fine without the treasure. Everyone's probably perhaps better off without the treasure, right?
Yeah, so there's one really gross scene on the train where Paddington has to be able to walk on top of the train and have his feet stick, so he's got candy apples, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty sure he impales his feet through the candy apple sticks.
Yeah. this ain't, you know, Paddington for Prime Minister. This is, you know, this is adult Paddington. It's not your mama's
so
Paddington.
Relieved or disappointed? No laser eyes.
Not disappointed, I guess.
A little disappointed.
Slightly disappointed, but here's why I'm mostly relieved. Paddington, kind of like, you know, how Batman in The Dark Knight was almost like the fourth most important character. Paddington's kind of sidelined for like a ton of this movie. And I kind of appreciate how, you know, Paddington, he's this whimsical bear who wears a raincoat in London, but I kind of like how his family, they get to have a whimsical adventure by themselves. They don't need a bear to
they
be
don't even
whimsical.
Need him. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was good. And Hugh Grant, the villain, perhaps the most whimsical of them all. And you know what? I'm not a big fan of whimsy, especially British whimsy, so much.
Uh-oh, John. But, we got a couple podcasts coming up.
But, you know, I mean, Hugh Grant, when someone compliments his buns and he says, well, you know, I'll tell Mr. and Mrs. Botty Cheek thank you, or whatever he says, that's just the right amount. Of whatever. I guess that's not necessarily whimsy, but it's just the right amount of cuteness and feel goodness. I don't know. Paddington 2. No subtitle. It's just no subtitle. This is what happens next with Paddington. We have no idea what happened to him before. All I know is Nicole Kidman rode a motorcycle and she was bad in the first movie.
Oh, is that the plot?
I think so, yeah.
Do either of you feel compelled to go watch Paddington 1 now?
Kind of.
No.
No.
I've heard it's not as good. The second one is supposed to be better?
The second one is famous. This is why you picked it, right, Eric?
It's 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it 99? According to the trivia, at one point anyway, I think someone must have 100%. Given it a red... It was beyond 100%. It was the most perfect Rotten Tomatoes movie. It was like something like 237 positive reviews, no negative reviews. And so, which made it like mathematically the least rotten movie ever on the site.
Yeah. Hard to find something to like, mm-hmm. wow, this movie was just awful, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I guess someone did. We can go over this real quick if you guys are curious. So the Muppet movie, by the way, cost $8 million.
Yeah.
And it made $65 million.
Good for it.
88% Rotten Tomatoes. Naked Gun, also 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. So Naked Gun, $12 million to $78. Paddington, $40 million was the cost, $230 million. So this made some money.
Oh, it did? I thought it was a famous flop. Must be worldwide numbers were really big.
If $200 million of that is from the Chinese market, then maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So Everything worked out okay. Everybody got paid. Hollywood fat cats get the money they deserve, is what you're saying.
Yeah. All the Hollywood fat cats got the money they deserve, yeah. Mm.
Okay. Well, that is Paddington 2. Sounds like you guys were nonplussed on the movie. Is there anything that I missed that we need to talk about?
So I enjoyed the movie, and we'll get there. There's some awards. So like the things that I want to talk about and that I like about the movie, I gotta wait a little bit. But if we want to, we're gonna do our normal awards, but we always forget to do this. So I'm gonna kind of front load this. Our friends on Facebook think that the Alice Cooper episode of The Muppet Show was the best TV episode.
Okay.
And the Muppet movie just barely beat out Naked Gun for the best movie.
Oh, interesting.
One vote for Paddington 2. Thank you, Andy.
Very nice. Okay. We'll have to do that.
I guess what I'd say about Paddington 2 is what I appreciated about it and what I was really hoping for, and I think it delivered on it for me, was in a world where there's, the Yogi Bear movie and Scooby-Doo and Alvin and the Chipmunks live-action movies that are all varying levels of horrible,
right?
But they said, okay,
they're all poochy-rific.
Yeah, like we can actually make a movie that's good, even though it's inspired by some nostalgic thing that's going to make a bunch of money no matter what we do out of it. They took the time to make it actually good. So I appreciated that.
Yeah. Totally. Okay, before we go further,
A word from our sponsor.
Emails. If you want to send us an email, send it to Yours, Mine, Theirs podcast at gmail.com. We will read it on air, and we will read it in its entirety, provided it's less than 200 words, and we will probably make fun of it, but not in a way that you will you won't regret it too much. I'll just say that. So go to our blog, yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com. That way you can download direct MP3s of all the stuff we've talked about, even though iTunes only has like the last 20 podcasts or whatever. Go to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, and leave whatever review you want after that. Totally fine. You can do that. That's the most important thing. It's more important than breakfast, as I always say. Let's see. And our number is 801-896-4542. 801-896-4542. We won't pick up, but you can leave a voicemail. You can start your manifesto decrying civilization, and we will play it on the air. So go ahead and do that. Also, tell us why we're wrong about all the movies, or why we're right, or some other things that we should do. Spotify. We picked the exact right time to move to Spotify. There's no controversy about being on Spotify at all right now. Find us on Spotify. I think you just do a search for Yours, Mine, Theirs. Yours, Mine, and Theirs on Spotify. So I believe that's it. So those are all the ways to contact us. I'm Rex Bassier on Letterboxd. We always write our reviews on Letterboxd, and we always provide links on Letterboxd to the podcast. So go there. Roy is ValNJR1, right?
Yes, sir. Also, the most important part, I think we forgot to mention this last time, too. Do you want to be in charge of making us watch a movie like the Muppet movie? Because we watched the Muppet movie because of you guys.
Yes.
Heck, we watched all of these movies because of this category, because of you guys. So you want to participate in that, you got to find us on Facebook, and then
Facebook
you can
is a big one.
Vote and make us watch stuff we may not want to watch, and that's good times. So
yeah, find us on Facebook. That's where most of the action happens, besides the actual download of the podcast itself. So definitely do that. Also, make friends with us. Join the group there on Facebook. We have a Facebook group, and also join us on the podcast itself, as Eric has done for the past hour, and also for 3 hours 2 weeks ago. So, enjoy it, Eric. Go ahead and testimonialize.
Oh, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah, thank you.
We have 2 slots open in for this year, 2022. So we do have some spaces available. So, yeah, hop on with us. Also, John, do we want to talk about our weird possible plan now, or do you want to save that for future business?
Let's save it for future business, because I can't remember all the details right now. So let's save it for the end, especially because it's so experimental and so spur of the moment, and I was so tired.
And there's a 95%
when you told about it. Yeah.
There's at least a 95% chance that it'll never happen.
Let's just discuss our dream with you guys toward future business. We'll do that toward the end of the episode. So that's a teaser. If you're not used to listening to all these episodes in their completion. So, we'll get there. Okay.
So, awards?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's do awards. Now, we're going over all six of these things are in play
here. Included all six equities, yes.
So we have three TV shows and three movies, and so this is going to be a little bit more unusual of awards because we're going to rank all six and we're going to award all six.
I do not have taglines for the TV shows.
Oh, except for taglines, neither do I. Yeah, those are right out. No, we're not doing those.
Or movie posters.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, no. Or posters. Yeah. Yeah, no, TVs don't have posters. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Roy, best title?
Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad.
Okay. All right, Eric, best title?
Yeah, I agree. Naked Gun. It was easy.
It was not easy because I went with A Substantial Gift, The Broken Promise. Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
All right, Eric, best poster?
Naked Gun.
It was Riding the Bullet?
Yeah, only one that was doing anything fun.
Okay. Roy?
So I wanted to pick the Muppet Movie, but I just every time I look at the poster of him like surfing in on the bullet, which also looks like a unit, I think it's pretty great. So
just the idea of a 60-year-old man surfing is funny. Right? He's on a bullet and he's flying through the air. Yeah, great.
I actually went with the Muppet Movie on this. I just like that they got so many happy creatures into a single car on the poster.
Yeah,
it's nice to see. Okay, best opening credits, Roy.
I'm gonna go with the Naked Gun. I love the gimmick with the cop car driving around, and in the movie, this is one of the things I think that improved to the movie, with the cop car like drives upstairs and like in an elevator and through like a locker room and all sorts of crazy places. It's good. It's fun.
Okay, Eric.
I wanted to go with Naked Gun. It was close, but I ultimately went with Paddington going through the town. It was fun.
It was meeting all the cute. People.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Again, I'm going with the credits. I don't think the movie improved on the TV show. I'm going with the credits for A Substantial Gift, the Police Squad episode, because not only did it have the car driving around, but it also had the narrator giving the incorrect title of the episode. Which I've seen the beginning of Police Squad episodes like 100 times. I laugh out loud every time the narrator gives the other title.
That's a recurring
gag. Every episode. Yeah.
It's not something that was changed after the fact or something like that. I was wondering about that.
No.
Okay. That makes sense.
Eric, best technology?
In Naked Gun, the airbags that instantly smother anyone in the vehicle and completely explode out the windows and everything. I thought that was possibly a liability for the auto manufacturer. But,
and drive the car away? Yeah.
Yeah. Presumably a safety feature that...
When he shoots at his own car and blows his own car up and then says to everybody, did anybody get a look at the driver or the license plate? And then you slowly gets that look on his face like, oh, that's my car.
Yeah.
I'm going to like just embarrassingly just kind of trail off and not talk to these people anymore.
Yeah, that's a funny moment, isn't it?
It's funny. Okay, sorry about that. Roy, technology.
Well, it's Alice Cooper's CB radio direct to Satan.
That's what I have. when you said that, when you mentioned that earlier, I'm like, crap, I'm in charge of this podcast. Roy gets to say that first. But yeah, the direct CB radio to Satan. I have some honorable mentions for, of course, Paddington's suitcase ladder. But then also in Naked Gun, the chalk outline floating in the water.
It's
good technology there. Okay, Eric, best outfit.
Best outfit. I went with Hugh Grant's Harley's dog food costume from the commercial that he does, which he kind of looks like a Muppet in that crazy dog outfit. So
that's a good outfit. Okay.
Yeah.
Honorable mention for me for Hugh Grant's just beige and plaid suit near the beginning. Some great, great Hugh Grant suits in the movie.
He has lots of great suits. He makes a really drop-dead gorgeous nun, doesn't he?
He does. So attractive.
So attractive.
Yeah, okay. Roy, best outfit, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Steve Martin's waiter outfit with the really short shorts.
Short shorts.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's wearing lederhosen, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Well, that's what we wear in Idaho.
Yeah. Best vintage. Yeah. Okay, well, I said my honorable mention, but my winner is also a suit, and that's Frank Drebin's evening suit when he slips into something more comfortable that is, like, also a tearaway suit. That just with just one motion, he rips the entire suit off his body. Okay, Roy, best name.
That's going to go for Snake Walker, Frog Killer.
I knew you were going to pick Snake Walker. Okay, Eric?
Oh, I went with Knuckles McGinty.
Knuckles McGinty. Okay, I'm going to talk about that later. We're going to talk more about the name itself. Okay, I honorable mention to Snake Walker, as you said. Also, in Muppet Movie, Dr. the TV show, the TV episode, one of the Muppets is named Dr. Strange Pork. It's one of the space Muppets, I think. The one of the space pigs, Dr. Strange Pork. But I'm going to go with Enrico Palazzo, the concussed opera singer that Drebin takes over. Okay. Roy, best food.
Sparkling Muscatel, Idaho's finest champagne.
That's okay. Okay, Eric.
I went with the banana rum ice cream that gets mentioned at the fair when the Muppets are ordering ice cream. Yeah, they don't show it, but that sounds delicious.
All right. I'm going to intro my food with the line, "How hot and wet do you want it?" It's Priscilla Presley's boiled roast.
That's sloppy roast.
Yeah, sloppy roast, yeah. Okay, Eric, best alien.
Best alien. I wanted to get clever, but I just went with Gonzo.
Because he is an alien, right?
He is an alien.
That's what he is?
There's Muppets in Space where they reveal that Gonzo is an alien, but there's like a line in Muppet Movie that I was really surprised where they were like looking up the stars, and I think Gonzo says something like, "I can't wait to get back there" or something. It's like strongly alluded that Gonzo is an alien. Yeah. okay, Roy, best alien.
No, it's Gonzo.
It is Gonzo. Okay, I put Gonzo. Also, I put Paddington's mum, because she doesn't belong in London.
She's from Darkest Brazil.
Darkest Brazil, yeah. Okay, Roy, best FX.
Okay, I went with O.J. Simpson at the end, him, like, because it looks just like the real O.J. Simpson going down those stairs and then flying off the rail. I don't know how they did it. It was amazing.
It was amazing. I think they used the same dummy as when Priscilla? Ricardo Montalban was had Priscilla as hostage, yeah.
I went with the Paddington 2 mini prison Wes Anderson diorama thing.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was cool.
Okay. Yeah. My honorable mention goes to in the Muppet Show episode with Alice Cooper. At one point, the pigs in space, they all turned wireframe and see-through.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually like, oh, this is really weird. Yeah, it was a weird effect that they used. But the winner is the storybook sequence where Paddington goes into the pop-up book with his mother. And things are 2D and 3D at the same time.
Hmm.
Okay, Roy, best location.
Phoenix Buchanan's Actor's Attic.
Okay, with all the mannequins.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, with
all the outfits and everything. And all
wonderful.
The headshots of Hugh Grant from 30 years ago. Okay, Eric, what do you have for location?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Hugh Grant's apartment, the whole thing was really cool, funky kind of design and everything, so...
No. I went Saskatchewan. It's a very big province, so there must be something good there. okay. Eric, best song.
Okay. Don't fire me, but the Paddington cartoon theme song. it wasn't good, but I liked that in a 20-minute episode, like 8 minutes of it was the opening theme song. So it meant we got less Paddington cartoon by having a long theme song
that
told a big long seemed to, you know, the expository theme song trope that we don't see anymore. I like that.
Okay. Roy, best song.
So I love this song. This is like a top 100 song for me, like for real. And it's Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem.
Really?
And I just like, cause I feel like they're like, okay, well, we got to have a song so you guys can kind of introduce yourselves to the audience so they know what you're all about. But it's a great song. The lyrics are incredible. So it's Can You Picture That, right? And so there's a line that says, lost my heart in Texas, northern lights affect us. I keep it underneath my hat. Aurora Borealis shining down on Dallas. Can you picture that? That's wonderful. And then there's just one line where he says, where is it? Beat down the walls, begin, believe, behold, begat. Oh, I just love this song. So, yeah, it's this.
Well, right. The Beatles wrote a whole album about this band, so they must be pretty good.
I mean, runner-up is obviously the Miss Piggy falling in love with Kermit song.
But. So no mention of Rainbow Connection, one of the, you know, Rainbow one of the most iconic songs ever in movies.
That song always kind of confuses me because it feels like, should you be chasing the rainbow or should you not? Right. Like, I don't. So but anyway, it's a lovely song.
So
but
it's nuanced. I really dig
it. It's OK. Well, there you go.
Now, and also no love for Moving Right Along. Obviously the highlight of the Muppet movie as far as
Moving Right Along is great.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of great songs. And actually, what's the one with Rolf, the dog, right? Hope That Something Better Comes Along. Like they didn't phone it in on a single song in the Muppet movie.
Right. Anyway. Okay. Well, my winner, of course, is our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, as sung by Frank Drebin. to this day, for the past 30 years, whenever I've sung the national anthem, I've actually sung the words, gave proof through the night that we still had a flag. That's how I sing the national anthem now.
That's good.
Okay, Roy, best guest.
So honorable mention to Moss from the IT
crowd. I have
crowd.
That down. Richard Iowata. Yep. I have that written down.
Yeah, yep. I love him. So, but I'm going with from the Players Club, Telly Savalas.
Telly Savalas. Yeah, you're strangely, for the past month, you've really, really, really been into Telly Savalas, I've noticed.
All right, John.
Pretty crazy.
Are you not welcome to the Players Club?
I'm not welcome. They denied my card.
Okay.
All right. Eric, best guest.
Yeah, I also had Moss, but then I also, another one that I had was Weird Al and Naked Gun, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Weird Al, that's a great guest spot.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I almost picked Weird Al. I thought that would have been really lovely, but there were so many guests to pick from. This was, like, really difficult.
Yeah.
But also not difficult for me at all, because I think, obviously, the best guest is Lorne Greene in the opening credits of A Substantial Gift, where it says special guest star Lorne Greene, and he's thrown out of a car and dies and then doesn't appear in the episode. Like, that's his guest spot. His guest spot is literally in the opening credits. Yeah. Okay. Roy, best external recurring character.
Oh my gosh. I mean, there's like a million, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got a bunch of honorable mentions, but I don't want to take anything away from anyone. And so after you guys have mentioned yours, if any of these were not mentioned, I'll bring them up. But so my winner is I'm going to go with Steve Martin.
Yeah. From Three Amigos?
From Three Amigos.
Yeah. Okay. Eric, best external recurring character.
I went with an easy one. I picked Frank Oz as Miss Piggy and Fozzie and Yoda.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Miss Piggy and one. Yoda.
Yeah.
Okay. I went with, I thought I'd kind of go deep because I mention this movie whenever I can, but Sally Hawkins, the mom who, the weird looking mom in Paddington 2, and also she's in Shape of Water, but not that movie, but Sally Hawkins is in, that's my, she's in, what's that movie called that I love?
Dream Little Dream Part 2?
No, Never Let Me Go. Sally Hawkins is the teacher in Never Let Me Go who drops the bombshell on the students that they're not as good as normal human students. everybody see Never Let Me Go. It's my favorite movie. Okay. Roy, best internal recurring character.
Oh, no. We got to do some honorable mentions. So,
okay, go
ahead. Obviously, Telly Savalas, who was also in The Towering Inferno.
Yes.
The most macho man alive, Ricardo Montalban, who was in The Wrath of Khan.
Wrath of Khan.
The L.A. City Hall, which we also saw in O.J. Made in America.
Yes. Okay, very good.
And the song Jump in the Line, which was in Paddington 2 and Beetlejuice.
Okay. I have an honorable mention, kind of like L.A. City Hall. The line when the mayor says, "Let's not have another incident like on the West Side last year," and then Frank Drebin says, the mayor says, "That's my policy," and then Drebin says, "Look, mayor, when I see five weirdos in togas stab a guy in the middle of the park in broad daylight with 100 onlookers, I don't ask questions. I shoot the bastard. That's my policy." And then she says, "You killed five actors. They were doing Julius Caesar Shakespeare in the park, you moron. They were good actors." And that line is directly lifted from Dirty Harry. Remember when we watched Dirty Harry? When Dirty Harry says, when the guy's like, "Let's not have another incident like you did on the West End," and he goes, and Dirty Harry says, "Look, when I see a guy with his pants around his ankles and a girl screaming, I don't ask questions, I shoot the bastard. That's my policy." He says the exact same thing as Frank Drebin. So, anyway, that's my honorable mention for external recurring. Okay, now, internal recurring character, Roy.
A little tougher.
Yeah.
But I went with the three thieves in Paddington who were all played by Hugh Grant.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So yeah, he recurred because he was a thief, but he was the man of many faces, Hugh Grant.
He was a nun. He was a hippie. Mm-hmm. What other? He was a knight, a beefeater is what they called him, right? So yeah,
that's interesting. That's a good way to do it. That's a good job. Okay, Eric, what do you have?
Mine was murderous old white men. We have in Naked Gun, we have Frank Drebin shoots a whole bunch of people. and in a Police Squad as well. And then in the Muppet movie, we have Doc Hopper who wants to kill Kermit and probably other animals. in Paddington 2, you don't really want to know why Knuckles McGinty's in jail.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Everyone in the entire prison is afraid of him, so yeah, he probably did kill a bunch of people. Okay. Yeah. This is not as elaborate as your guys's, but I went with a villain throwing something at Frank Drebin's face and then that object getting stuck on his face, incapacitating Frank Drebin. In a substantial gifts, I think she throws her wig at him and the wig wraps around his face. He's like, "Ah," and he like gets knocked down. And then in Naked Gun, the evil mind controlled doctor throws a pillow at Frank's face and it gets stuck on his face. So I love that. Okay. Eric, best death.
Mine was from Police Squad, Mr. Twice, when he gets shot and for like 15 seconds, he like twirls his tongue around and makes a bunch of crazy faces before he finally falls.
Oh man, that rivals the Paul Rubens death in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. This isn't mine, but Mr. Twice's death is nothing compared to the death of the bank employee that she also shoots, who, as he's dying, he has to like stamp his papers and file things with his last breath.
He didn't make the funny faces.
Okay, but my answer is Ed's, like Ed, the other cop in the police force, Frank Drebin's boss, Ed's father, who starts crying in Frank's arms because after Ricardo Montalban gets tranked in the neck and falls off the balcony and then gets run over by the truck and the steamroller and the marching band. Ed cries, "Oh, Frank, my father went the same way." So that's my answer. Ed's father. Okay. Roy, best villain.
Sure. Let's see. I'm going with Cartoon Paddington.
That's what I did. I did Cartoon Paddington with his evil eyes and Cobra Commander voice and, you know, and also in The Worst Thing I've Seen.
Yep.
Okay. Eric, what do you have?
Eric.
So mine from the Paddington cartoon, the Nosferatu in a trench coat that was chasing him around.
Right. Yeah.
But that was my honorable mention. My real pick is O.J. Simpson because he killed two people.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good villain.
Pretty bad.
That's a good villain. Yeah, the Nosferatu, that's who I said was the Romulan. He was actually the Romulan from the later Next Generation movies style. You know, he had the he had spiky ears. And he was bald like a Romulan. Yeah.
Yeah. Inexplicably, like just that just made him evil, I guess. I don't know what the point of that was.
My honorable mention.
It's weird that none of us mentioned Alice Cooper, who's trying to sell Muppet souls to the devil.
We should have said. Yeah. That was surprisingly fittingly villainous. It was like that Muppet. It's funny. That Muppet episode, it's like if anybody had any fears about Alice Cooper. It's like is that exactly what they thought it would be? You know, like Alice Cooper trying to gather souls.
Yeah, so they thought he'd be doing that with real kids.
Yeah,
you know, like outside some playground somewhere. Like, I don't know.
Wow. My honorable mention for villain is all actors, as the grandma in Paddington says. Like, they're all bad people.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. Eric, who's your hero?
I kind of mentioned it earlier, Paul King, the writer director of Paddington 2, for not making another terrible kids movie just because you can.
Good job, Paul King. Yeah. That's a good way to go.
Yeah.
Roy Hero.
Against all odds, Knuckles McGinty shows up at the last minute to save the day.
You didn't see it coming.
What about the kids of the poor couple that he knuckled to death to get put in prison in the first place? No hero.
So also J-Dog for casting aside J-Dog. I guess that's pretty heroic.
I might have to pick J-Dog. I don't believe what I have written down here. I have written down honorable mention the parrot that says he's behind you. and then I also have Nordberg that you picked as the villain. So I probably shouldn't pick Nordberg. I'm going to go with J-Dog for stealing a train. Okay. Okay. Roy, best goof.
Okay. Let's see. In the song with Rolf and Kermit at the very end, Rolf and Kermit are harmonizing. And while Rolf's harmonizing voice continues to sustain the final notes, Rolf is also improvising and scatting.
Oh.
So,
is Rolf kind of like one of those Benedictine monks who can do like the duotones?
I guess so. I could have picked any like of the two dozen times that puppet people, that like human arms were shown in the Muppet movie.
Okay. Eric, goof.
I've noticed a couple of different times in the Muppet movie and also in the TV show where the Muppets only use one of their hands and the other one just stays perfectly still. I think that was an accident.
Okay. That's pretty good. I'm going to go. Okay. So we'll have to discuss this. In the movie Paddington 2, there's a character named Knuckles, and he has a tattoo of his own name where he spells his own name N-U-C-K-E-L apostrophe S. The apostrophe's in there, and I think he has to like switch his arms around because like his like the beginning
in the wrong order.
Yeah, he did it in the wrong order, so he has to switch his hands around because so it like does it in the wrong order. So that's kind of goof in itself. But the movie, okay, but the thing is, he spells his name that way. That's how he spells his name. So does that not make it his name? I mean, isn't the one thing you can own for yourself is his name? So I maintain that his name is Knuckles, spelled in that ridiculous way with three typos.
Yes.
And the goof is that all the characters and the newspaper articles and the closed captions for the movie itself spell his name K-N-U-C-K-L-E-S. Mm. Yeah.
Oh.
Very good.
Okay. Roy, best LOL.
Okay. So we already talked about Frank and the Harbor Master exchanging money.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, and I thought this was so funny, Frank shooting at his own car. Was so good. But my favorite, the joke that made me laugh the hardest when I heard it the first time, in Police Squad was when Frank says cigarette and she says, yes, I know.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so funny. And if you watch the entire run of Police Squad, that joke is used about 10 times.
That's true. I think the joke in Naked Gun is actually much better because Ricardo Montalban offers him a cigar and he goes, Cuban? And he goes, no, Welsh Irish. My father was from Wales. Yeah. Okay. Eric, LOL.
I went with Ricardo Montalban falling over the edge and getting run over like four times.
Okay.
It's one of those things where they made it go way too long and it only got funny.
Okay. I have two that I'm going to specifically save. I'm going to mention in my rankings for my convoluted rankings. But the one that's left over, I just have to mention, it's from Naked Gun, and it's during the baseball game when they're like, oh, great, let's have everybody look at the Jumbotron for some of the wacky events, wacky sports bloopers that have happened on the baseball field. And in one of the bloopers, one of the baseball players is attacked by a tiger on the field. I really love that part. Okay, Eric, WTH.
So my honorable mention is the Gonzo's car crash where it somehow flips on top of their car without doing any damage to either one of the cars. Yeah. Like,
that's great.
They're coming head on at each other and it just jumps up on top. But the other was kind of a quasi funniest moment, but when Frank Drebin goes to visit Mr. Twice's widow and she says, what am I supposed to tell my son? And one of the things he says is, tell him a big monster came and took him to Daddy Heaven. So, that was so great. So,
oh, that's good. Okay. Yeah. My WTH is in the Muppet Show in the episode where there are a bunch of teeth, I think.
Oh, that was such a weird sketch.
Oh, yeah.
And then the teeth are saying some weird things. And then the teeth had teeth. So it was teeth within teeth. And it was like this weird inception of teeth Muppets.
That was so bizarre.
Yeah. Holy cow. Okay. Ray, you said yours, right?
I did not, but I'm about to.
Okay, go ahead.
I definitely didn't. Okay, so in Paddington 2, Grandma Brown almost made the movie rated R. Like, she legit tried to blow a hole through Phoenix Buchanan's head with a shotgun.
Right, because, she didn't know it was a plastic dart gun.
Yeah.
She shot him right in the head. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Okay, Roy, while you're here, best scene.
Okay. I love this. It's just the finale of the Muppet movie when the set falls apart and then the rainbow comes through and then they just sing the life is like a movie, write your own ending. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
That's good. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric, scene.
In Police Squad, I mentioned it earlier when, they do the reenactments of the killing in the bank and the bodies are just piling up. Let's try it from this angle. Tilt it a little more and shoots another guy. And then it cuts away and there's a big pile of bodies behind him. That was great.
Wow. Yes. That's good. Okay. My scene is just in Naked Gun, the entire baseball game. It's like the last half hour of the movie. But everything that happens in the baseball game, I really adore.
Very good.
Okay, Roy, best actor.
So it's not even close. It's Hugh Grant. He knocks it out of the park. He's great.
I knew you'd pick Hugh Grant. That's fine. So I was able to pick someone else. Okay, Eric?
Mine was O.J. Simpson. Didn't seem like a murderer at all in this role. I totally bought him as a nice injured police officer.
Nice. Okay. I honorable mention to Rex Hamilton as Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Pretty good there. By the way, his only IMDb credit.
Is that it?
Yeah. But I'm going to go with Jane Kouris, I think. There are several people in the credits of Naked Gun that are listed by the line they say. So, for example, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo, and it says that guy, and it's that kid from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I think it's the kid from
it's Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure who says, hey, that's Enrico Palazzo. And then, you know, someone else, like, they're listed as, hey, you dumb broad, where'd you learn to drive? And but I'm going with, you killed him. The lady at the end of Naked Gun who says, you killed him when Frank Drebin, like, knocks out Khan. So Jane Kouras is her name.
Okay.
Roy, you said you had a lot of questions. I don't have very many, so let's just get started with yours.
I'm just down to one. So the Batman thing, how many miles did Kermit and Fozzie drive? So my final question is, if you break out of prison after presumably murdering an entire family with your fists, and then you do one good deed, does that mean that you're free? I think that's the law, right? Is the law that if you break out of prison and do a good deed, then you're free?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Okay. I think it's good to know.
It's written in there.
So the thing is, we don't know. Okay, we've been joking. We assume that Knuckles murdered a family, but I'm starting to believe that if he's not worried about, like, if he thinks the good deed will help, it's probably removing a tag on a mattress or something. He's just mean and everybody fears him.
Oh, no. In one of the episodes of the cartoon, it goes in depth into Knuckles murdering people with his bare hands.
Oh, wow.
Good to know.
Yeah, if you watched them all, you'd have seen it.
I will trust you. I will trust you implicitly on that.
How could you have watched them all? Okay, so. But I guess the point is, like, if you go to prison, never fear. The only obstacle between you and freedom is escaping. You have to successfully escape. But once you escape, if you can do a good deed, you're good.
Yeah.
So I assume. That's why I asked the question.
Next week we'll talk to the English folks about, like, some of the barrister law or whatever.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's probably something.
Adding to barrister law.
Barrister. Yeah. Very good. Okay, so I have a question. Wait, sure. Eric, do you have a question?
We already talked about it. How and why did Paddington get sent to London? What was their thinking there?
Yeah, no, we still don't totally know.
Makes no sense.
Okay, my question is, what's the duties of the Minister of Marmalade, like, day-to-day?
I think he's quality control, isn't he?
Like, they said it, right? Yeah, he's supposed to taste it for the Prime Minister. That's it?
I must have weirdly zoned out during that part of the it does sound like a sham job. He's probably just taking marmalade kickbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, for sure, yeah.
It's like when at your church your calling is like the assistant to the assistant building coordinator, right? It's a sham job, yeah.
Not good pay.
Okay.
By the way, I forgot to mention one thing. For my LOL, there's some, in Paddington 2, Knuckles has another tattoo of a boxer, and it's on his forearm, and it's a tiny little boxer, and, like, the boxer's arm, like, comes out toward his hand and gets wider and wider until it becomes his hand. And that's a really, really funny tattoo. It's just bizarre looking. Eric, do you have a favorite line?
I do. When in Naked Gun, when Frank is getting fired or sent home or whatever from the police force, and he says, and just think, next time I shoot someone, I could be arrested.
Yeah. That's a great line.
That was his biggest concern. Not how am I going to pay my bills. Just I could be arrested for shooting people now.
He usually shoots people. Yeah.
Yeah. With no problem. Yeah.
Okay. Roy, best line.
So we already mentioned the I'd sell my soul for a pencil line. And then, so I also love the very beginning of Naked Gun. I love the line. Don't ever let me catch you guys in America. But then I think my favorite is the quote at the beginning of the Muppet movie where Fozzie says, if I'm not funny, I won't be able to live with myself. And then Mr. Butson says, well, then you'll have to find a new apartment.
Yes.
And I just think that's great.
Oh, man, that was teased like 2 hours ago on this podcast.
Yes, it was.
We got there. Yeah. Okay. Honorable mention of a line. It's in Naked Gun. And it's when the doctor is saying to Nordberg's
near widow, like his Norberg's wife, I think it was like the doctor or the nurse says, "Hey, we can save your husband's arm. Where would you like it sent?" Okay. But okay. Yeah. My favorite line is from Police Squad, and it's a little bit long. I'm just going to read it really quick. It's just Frank Drebin's voiceover, and he says, "There'd been a recent wave of gorgeous fashion models found naked and unconscious in laundromats on the West Side. Unfortunately, I was assigned to investigate holdups of neighborhood credit unions. I was across town doing my laundry when I heard the call of the double killing." Okay, we're to taglines. Okay, Roy, let's hear your favorite tagline and your alternate taglines, please.
Sure. So the best tagline is, "You've read the ad, now see the movie."
From Naked Gun. Yeah.
From Naked Gun, yep. Okay, for my alternates, the Muppet Movie, family-friendly entertainment except for the pig-frog sex fantasy scene. from Naked Gun, from The Files of Police Squad, all nude guns done tastefully. Paddington 2, "We know the cartoon sucks, we are so sorry." And that's it.
That's good.
Doesn't even reference the movie, so.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, Mr. Eric Person.
So I went with the best tagline as the Muppet Movie, "More entertaining than humanly possible."
Oh. Was,
yeah. And then the big jerk face Roy basically took mine for the Muppet Movie. Finally, an interspecies love story the whole family can enjoy.
Good job, you guys.
And then for the Naked Gun, exactly as the Second Amendment intended.
Oh, that's good.
And then for Paddington 2, a funny-haired creature in a red hat is here to make Britain great again. What's the worst that could happen?
Oh, wow. Wow, there's levels to that. That's good. Okay, my favorite tagline is Naked Gun. You've read the ad, now see the movie. Okay. My Muppet tagline, my alternate Muppet tagline, is kind of what you guys were talking about with the humanly possible thing. It's just more human than human is my Muppet tagline. Oh. Okay. My Naked Gun tagline, he may practice safe sex, but he doesn't practice safe gun. My Paddington tagline, if we are kind and polite, the world will be right, especially in prison. Cool. All right. Eric, do you have a titular line?
I do. It was a perfect one. Hmm. In the fantastic episode of Paddington for Prime Minister, a random guy in the crowd says, "Paddington for Prime Minister."
That's good.
Very good.
Which is apparently all you needed to say to get put on the ballots is for Prime Minister in England. I'm not sure how that works, but
yeah. Seemed pretty easy to suddenly find yourself as Prime Minister in England somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Roy, titular.
Sure. So I'm Statler. I'm Waldorf. We're here to huckle the Muppet Movie.
Oh, dang. That's good. I should have caught that one. I obviously didn't catch either of these.
So you could always say Police Squad, because the opening credits, they say Police Squad.
In color. I should have done that. I was, for some reason, I was only thinking of the movies. I put when Kermit asks, "Hey, Fozzie, why do you have a marmalade sandwich?" And then Fozzie says, "Don't we have a bit of Paddington 2 in all of us?"
Yeah, that was a really great moment, isn't that?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Okay, let's see. I think we're to special awards. We only have two this time, right?
Three.
Oh, is it most justified movie as well?
Most worthy of adaptation, biggest improvement, biggest deprovement, right?
Okay, I didn't write down most worthy. Okay, let's start there, though. No, I know, that was the one I nominated. I just thought yours were, like, superseded my nomination.
No way. Most worthy. So, again, I think going back to, like, the Muppet Show was a huge, huge, huge cultural thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that movie was a no-brainer. So that's probably the most worthy.
Okay.
For me.
Okay. All right. Eric, anything about worthy?
I went with Police Squad. I think that it was, because it was so short, lived on TV, deserved being brought back in movie form.
Good.
Very good.
I went with Police Squad just to complete the joke, because it's like Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad. I just love the idea that they made three Naked Gun movies and there were only six Police Squad episodes. And so, like, just the amount of media, of the amount of content in the movies that's based off something else, like, way superseded the amount of, of media in the original. Yeah. Okay. Roy, what's the most deproved example of these?
I'm going to go with moving from Police Squad to Naked Gun is my most deproved.
Because there were too many jokes, as you say.
Yeah, John, it's like in Amadeus when there's too many notes. This is too many jokes.
You're the court emperor, the musician court
I decide.
Person. The Rooney. What was Rooney in Amadeus? What was his
he Emperor was just a, Joseph?
Well, because there was he the emperor? Oh, no. I was thinking the other guy was the bishop. Okay, no, he was the emperor of Austria. Okay, that's right. Yeah. And so, yeah, he just says, that's you, emperor of Austria, saying too many jokes.
That's me.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I mean, we talked about it. I just think that the format was better as a TV show. But anyway, well, I don't want to belabor
that's it. That's your opinion, man. Okay.
That's my opinion.
All right, Eric, most deproved.
Yeah, I think, kind of spoiler alert here, the only one where I have the show ranked above the movie is Police Squad versus Naked Gun. So I would have to go with that one.
Mm. Okay. Well, you guys are both wrong. I went with the Naked Gun.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, then.
We're all wrong is what I'm saying. Okay.
What's the biggest improvement then?
Okay, the biggest improvement, I'll just start with this. I'm going to say the Muppet movie just because it you could see the Muppets' torsos in the Muppet movie. And their legs and everything.
So that giant improvement in technology.
Yeah, it's a technological improvement. I'm going technological improvement.
So you're saying that because I guess you're like blacking out the experience of watching Paddington for Prime Minister.
No, I'm saying I just realized I have another note written here. We can't because it's Paddington's disqualified because it should be the Paddington movie should be gauged on the light on the stop motion Paddington and not this debacle of the cartoon. So I disqualified Paddington from being an improvement on the cartoon because the cartoon is right out. It shouldn't be in the conversation.
It's right out. Yeah. I'm requalifying the cartoon. And so the most biggest improvement is Paddington 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the purposes of being able to say again that the Paddington show was horrible, Paddington 2.
Okay. I said it was horrible in my own way.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
John.
Oh, yeah.
You did a good job.
Okay. It's time for rankings. This will be strange. Okay. So we have our sixth favorite. Okay. Roy, go ahead with your sixth favorite.
So out of these six, number 6,000 is Paddington for Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Eric?
Although perhaps my most enjoyable moment out of watching all of this stuff was when this ended. Mm-hmm. I'm going with Paddington for Prime Minister.
Okay. I am also going with Paddington for Prime Minister in last place, but warning you all now, this is where it gets really weird and contentious from this point on. Because I will say the five remaining, you know, items, I kind of loved them all. So okay, my fifth favorite is the Muppet movie. Okay, go Eric.
Yep, also the Muppet movie.
Wow, okay.
I'm going to go with Naked Gun.
Wow, Naked Gun and number five. Yeah. Okay.
Number four, I'm going with The Muppet Show with Alice Cooper.
Four, okay. Eric, you're number four.
Yeah, The Muppet Show with Alice Cooper.
Mm. My number four is Paddington 2, the movie.
Mm.
My number three is The Naked Gun, the movie. I love The Naked Gun, but it's my number three. Eric, you're number three.
I'm also The Naked Gun.
Okay.
All right. Well, my number three is Paddington 2. And my number two is A Substantial Gift.
A Substantial Gift is your number two. Okay. Yep. High marks for A Substantial Gift. Eric, you're number two. I'm kind of getting lost here. Yeah.
Yep. No, my number two is Paddington 2.
Paddington 2, number two.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My number two is the Alice Cooper Muppet Show. And my number one is The Broken Promise, but you guys read A Substantial Gift there.
So yes, what's your number one, Eric?
I concur. Police Squad, a show I had never, I may have known it was a thing, but not really. So I was pleasantly surprised. Very good.
All right. Well, so then my number one is the Muppet Movie. I think you guys, you two were actually pretty close. And I think we were mostly all in line, except I think we flipped the Muppet Movie around for, I don't know, what did you guys like
a lot? Did you think the movie with Leslie Nielsen was called The Muppet Movie? I think you just got the titles flipped, perhaps.
Oh, man, I love The Muppet Movie so much. So.
I thought The Muppet Movie was great. And I went on that big spiel about like what it means to me as an artist, if I were an artist. But it was still my number five, but all the other ones were really close. I think I really like Paddington 2 a lot because I didn't know going in it was the most kind of recognized on Rotten Tomatoes, which means it's just like positive score. That doesn't mean like degree of goodness, but I think something can be said about just the perfection in which like, okay, this is the perfect temperature of a warm bath and a grilled cheese sandwich to enjoy during the bath kind of thing. You know, it was just so steady and it just soothed my nerves like a lot, you know? Yeah. So, but I have to go on. I'm sorry about this, you guys, but I just have to talk a little bit about A Substantial Gift, the episode of Police Squad. I realized today, I took some notes, and I realized that every single note I took was a moment where I laughed out loud uproariously. So I'm just going to go over these really, really quick, not to, you know, just to go over the episode again. I laughed out loud when the opening credits reveal the wrong title that the narrator says. I laugh at that every single time. I laughed out loud when they said special guest star Lorne Greene and then they kill Lorne Greene in the opening credits. I laughed out loud when during the bank scene, when she's loading the gun, getting ready to make her move to steal the money, off camera, you hear the guy checking the guy's ID and then also checking him for a hernia at the same time. I laughed out loud so bad when she shoots her boss at the bank and her boss finishes up his work on the desk before dying. I laughed out loud when she shoots the guy and the guy makes his weird face. I laughed out loud when they travel to Little Italy and in the background of the car you can see the Colosseum and then they visit the person in Little Italy and out of her window you can see the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I laughed out loud when Frank Drebin is talking to the guy with his head cut off, you know, his head is off the screen. He's like, okay, let's make it happen. And then he leans over his desk and then he says, get me the mayor. And then you think he's talking to the intercom, but he's actually leaning over talking to a dwarf. And the dwarf says, you got it. I laughed out loud when Frank Drebin was just kind of casually musing to himself about how he had an affair with a man for several years. And there was all the innuendo and talk. And he's just talking to himself about it. And then he continues the story about how he had an affair with that guy's son for a year. But it wasn't quite the same, as he says it. I laughed out loud when Frank Drebin murdered all the other cops testing his bullet theory. I laughed out loud when, as I mentioned, when Frank Drebin was miffed that he wasn't on duty with the naked women found in the laundromat and how he was doing his laundry across town at the time. Then the short-range shootout, the fact that the suspect calls him Sergeant, Lieutenant, and Captain Drebin in the same conversation. And at the very end, when his boss says, Sergeant's Booker and take her away. And then Frank Drebin says, Sergeant Booker, Sergeant Takeaway, and he shakes both their hands. And then when he says, oh, how'd you find out? He's like, oh, a little hunchback at the office. And then he meets the hunchback at the office. And then I laughed out loud during the end credits when there was the freeze frame. Sorry that took so long to say, but that was actually longer than the actual episode. But those are all the notes I took in the episode. I think A Substantial Gift is one of the best things I've ever seen. So I just wanted to
mention that.
Okay.
Very, very good.
Okay. Are we almost to future business?
We're there.
We are there. We're there at Future Business. Okay, we have a pre-call. We're going to go ahead and get Phil and Mickey on the line. We spoke to them earlier today, just full disclosure, because, you know, they're in England, and it's like 5 days from now there right now. It's like some weird time.
Yeah.
So we talked to them. We got their movies. This is what Mickey is bringing, you know, to her new movies that she's bringing on the next podcast. These are her movies that made her. So play tape. Pushing play right now. What time is it there again?
It is currently 6:30 p.m.
Oh, rough stuff. Okay. Nice. Okay. And it's good to – we were just talking off air. It's good to hear Mickey's voice for the first time. And, Phil, it's good that you are using Mickey as a loophole to pick some new movies, we think.
I have been completely independent and applied no pressure.
Okay.
Except when I was asked for advice, and then I offered it gently.
So, okay. So can I ask, because in our messaging, I gave a few guesses as to what I thought Mickey's movies would be, and it was a joke. Those were all a joke. But so,
yeah.
John is my authority on all things Australia because he lived in New Zealand for 2 years, because that makes sense. So he's
1,000 miles away, yeah, it's nearby.
So John tells me that Australians really are not fans at all of the Crocodile Dundee movies because I think it's like Paul Hogan was exploiting Australia for American audiences. Is that the take that I got from you, John?
I don't remember saying that, but it sounds like something I would say.
Sounds like something you would say. Is that legit, Mickey? How do Australians feel about Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah, it's a bit – it's one of those films that we all know about, but no one's really that bothered by.
Okay, well,
it's cool. A bit like sort of some of the beers, Castlemaine 4X and Foster's. Sort
yeah.
Of people who don't live in Australia really associate them with the country and think that must be all they drink there. But if you go there, you can barely find one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like there were a lot of Foster's in New Zealand, so I guess that was the big Australia joke on New Zealand.
I saw one can. No, I didn't see any cans of Foster's when I was at a year in Australia. I didn't see any cans of Foster's. I saw one can of Castlemaine 4X
on
the bottom shelf at the back of a chiller cabinet in a 7-Eleven.
Because it was re-imported?
Probably.
Re-imported Foster's, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
So John and I have a shared guess that I think we'll keep to ourselves, and I have a hope which I know is going to go unfulfilled. But regardless, Mickey, we are ready to hear what three movies. So Mickey's coming on in 2 weeks, and it's Mickey and Phil because they're a package deal. But these are Mickey's movies.
I have struggled quite a lot, and certainly some of my first choices you've already done.
Mm-hmm.
So
Razorback.
I'm still thinking about the last one. So
she's
going to
make
I'll
a last
start,
minute decision.
Yeah, wow. I'll start oh, with gosh. The definite ones. So the first definite one is The Abyss.
Okay. Ooh. James Cameron Abyss.
Yes, James okay. Cameron's.
You know, I've never seen that.
Neither have I.
Oh, amazing.
It was
yeah,
a big
I've
James Cameron
it.
Movie. We've never seen it. Okay, awesome. Okay, cool.
I've seen that millions of times. It's a film that I sort of share the love of with my brother. So it always makes me think of my brother who lives in Australia.
Now, it makes me think of my brother because he used to work in a movie theater and he was once wearing an Abyss little pin that he got at the movie theater. And it's just one of the random memories I have of my brother, but I never saw the movie.
So The Abyss and Leviathan came out at the same time. They were like Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Deep Impact,
right?
Yeah.
So I've seen neither, so...
I've seen Leviathan, and it's sweet.
Is it? Okay.
I've seen Abyss, but only once, and it must be nearly 30 years ago or something, so I think that'll be pretty much new to all of us except Mickey.
So this is the movie that proved to us that we can breathe water. Is that this movie?
Yes. Spoilers.
Okay. There we go.
I've seen that part, yeah.
Okay, so movie number two is a movie from my childhood that I saw quite a lot and then coincidentally came to live in the city that it was set quite some time later. And that is a movie called Quadrophenia.
Oh, no way.
What's your witch? Really? How do you spell Quadrophenia?
With the Mods and the Rockers?
Yeah. That's the one, yeah.
Okay. I've never seen it. I know Sting is in it.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Sting is in
two
it.
For two.
Yeah. And it's a Who movie, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
As in the band, The Who? It,
right.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Sting
okay.
is also like, in Lynch's Dune, which is one yes. you
yeah,
wanted
I would have
to
done,
do but
yeah,
has been done.
I would have done.
Well, no. Well,
she just likes films with Sting in, basically. I'm surprised yeah. she hasn't got a whole triptych here.
We unofficially watched Lynch's Dune. I don't think we officially watched it.
I don't think it's not on the official list of movies. So.
Oh no. Oh well.
It's not I mean, ma'am, this is your podcast. You do whatever you want. Yeah, we did not officially watch Lynch's Dune. I watched it for homework. And it was fascinating. But
And we did talk about it. And you can talk about it all you want if you pick another movie. But okay. Or you can pick Dune if you want.
Yeah.
Or Jane Austen's Dune, which I hear is amazing.
Oh, God. that I would want to watch. Jane Austen's Dune, I would watch quite happily.
That sounds amazing, yeah.
So my last choice is one that I'm struggling with. And we thought maybe you can help us decide by asking if you've ever seen any sort of classical Australian films.
Oh, yeah, you said there was going to be an Australian one. Okay.
Except for Crocodile Dundee.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Or Crocodile Dundee 2.
Okay, so it's definitely Young Einstein then. Definitely.
Okay, so I think my idea of classic Australian movies is probably not the same as yours. So Australia has a number of good horror movies. I don't think that's where we're going here.
No.
I think of... also, quickly, Down Under is not an Australian film, right? It just takes place there. So, Cry.
It's a Magnum P.I. movie.
Magnum P.I. movie, yeah. And then yeah. Cry in the Dark is the famous Meryl Streep movie, right? But I don't know if that's technically an Australian movie. So, what I would hope for, this is the one I'm hoping for that you're not picking, but I was dying to see The Road Warrior. But
okay, not picking that. I was thinking. The big I don't know if it's technically an Australian movie, but Walkabout is a big Australian movie.
Ah,
that you have seen or you haven't seen?
I saw parts of it. Because we read the book in ninth grade, and so I remember watching it in school. But knowing what I know about Walkabout, about like how much nudity is in it, I know we must not have watched the whole movie in ninth grade. Not in that class. Not in Draper, Utah at that time, for sure. So I must not have seen – I must have just seen parts of the movie.
So, yeah, that is one of the films I'm mulling over.
Wow.
So John and I in chat last night, we did say that. John said, I'm thinking Walkabout, and I'd seen that on a few lists as well of famous Australian movies. So that was kind of what we thought might get picked.
That sounds like it's the choice then.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to do an anti-choice? I don't have your personality, obviously. I have my own personality, but if I had that conversation we just had, I would spitefully not choose it.
Well, no, because I think it's a good film, and obviously it has a lot of Australia in it. But not from my time necessarily. The other film that we're thinking about is more my time.
And is a comedy.
And is a bit lighter. So, you know, the other two, it would be a heavy run of three.
Okay,
this is my life, trying to get Mickey to make the
I'm just well, terrible. I'm so terrible. You feel free to delete this section from the...
not at all. So this is,
We'll lock in Walkabout.
Okay.
Good. We're curious, though, about what the movie you're talking about is that you're not picking.
Okay, so Muriel's Wedding.
Oh, Muriel's Wedding.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I love Muriel's Wedding. That's great.
Oh, we just locked in Walkabout.
See, and
hey, Mickey,
you know
this is your podcast, so it's whatever three movies you want, so...
Yeah.
Well, I could change my mind and go to Muriel's Wedding.
You could, but you've got about 7 seconds to do it.
As soon as I hit the stop recording button, we're set.
When we stop recording, we're set. Yeah, that's the rule. We can edit around this. We can fool everybody into thinking that we were picking Muriel's Wedding all along.
Okay. So I'm going to count down from three, and then you're going to say, Lazno, ready? 3, 2, 1,
I think let's stick with Walkabout.
Sticking with Walkabout.
Guys haven't seen it. And,
I think, and I haven't seen it either.
And you
and I have
seen
Muriel's
Bill.
Wedding, so it'll be the most fresh selection for the most people, which is what it's all about, I guess.
Yeah,
that's probably the right decision then. Okay.
And I
fine.
Think, you know, otherwise, it is going to be slightly heavy session, but, you know, maybe we can come back and do Muriel's Wedding another time.
Yeah. If any listeners get halfway through Walkabout and think, enough of this, then they can go watch
Muriel's Wedding.
It's like Muriel's Wedding is a remake of Mansfield Park, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
we could
slide it into the Austin movies for sure.
Yes.
So we
could. Yeah,
Jane Austen's Dune and Muriel's Wedding. It's not going to be as bad as I thought, this Jane Austen thing.
So just so you two know, for the Jane Austen movies, I am going to get to choose a film, and John will get to choose a film, and then whatever happens in the poll. So
okay.
I think John's taste is going to be non-traditional. I have one movie that I feel like needs to be in the set of three, and so I'll see how the poll goes. But there's a movie I really, really want to do. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
we look forward to it.
That's going to be Jane Austen's All Quiet on the Western Front.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, we'll see both of you. We'll hear both of you anyway. Mm-hmm. In a couple of weeks,
yep.
And we'll get preparing for those. We'll be looking for how to watch them. And okay, just to recap, let's see, The Abyss,
yep,
and Jane Austen's Dune, and Walkabout. What's the middle one? Oh, I forgot the middle one already.
Quadrophenia.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what I'm really excited about. I've always
She loves sci-fi, so we've got a sci-fi one in. She loves Australia, so we've got an Australian one in. And she grudgingly tolerates Britain, so we've got a British one.
So true.
Very. Okay. Wonderful. Very awesome. Okay, so 2 weeks, and we'll figure out the time thing because you guys are like 2 days apart as far as time goes or something.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely figure that out. We'll do whatever it takes. We should be able to cater pretty well. So, yeah, we'll let's all get watching then.
Thanks, you guys. Awesome. Talk to you in a few weeks.
All right.
Okay, we just listened to that, and
yeah. So,
hey, Eric, are you surprised to hear what we just heard about the three movies? What do you think of the three movies? She said,
"Terrible picks," but you know, I mean, I guess that's her choice. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, to recap, in case you know the audience didn't catch the 4 or 5 times
already. Or if Eric didn't catch it, just
yeah. So, The Abyss, Quadrophenia, and Walkabout.
Yeah. Eric, see any of those movies?
Never heard of any of them. The Abyss? I've heard of.
You didn't see The Abyss?
Yeah, the Abyss I've heard of. Never seen it, though. No.
Yeah, I've never seen it. But it's a movie where they breathe the water. We talked about that on the call. I'm really excited about Quadrophenia and Walkabout. Quadrophenia is about, like, it's like a Who movie, the Who rock opera. Something, maybe? The stories by The Who? Pete Townsend, something? Sting's in it. Modern Rockers? I don't know anything about it, but I'm excited to see it.
Isn't that what you call people who love thigh muscles? Quadriphiliacs?
I don't know.
I guess so. Or maybe it's someone who fears thigh muscles. Something like that.
I'd like a slice of that thigh.
Quadrophobia.
We'll learn what quadrophenia is in the next couple of weeks. So those are the picks.
We'll report back. Yeah.
Yep.
So I just refreshed, and Mickey's second podcast is definitely Jane Austen movies. It's 10-5, mm-hmm. And we had one lovely vote for Con Men movies. Oh, my sweet daughter! Sorry, Miriam. Yeah,
right. But Heist movies was kind of made it a little bit close, right?
Five votes. Five.
Okay.
So this is how big our podcast is, folks. So 5 votes for Heist movies, 10 for Jane Austen movies.
Wow,
a lot of those people aren't even
like
related to you.
Than we are.
Okay, so Jane Austen movies, just some musing, right? We, of course, the Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice, that's the big one. Unfortunately, we can't watch the Alan Rickman Sense and Sensibility movie because we've already done that.
If I'm being honest, and I have seen most of the official Jane Austen movies, mm-hmm. That's the best one.
Right.
Is that
right.
That's Ang Lee, isn't it?
Ang Lee did the Sense and Sensibility, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, when we talked all about it on some other podcast that we did.
It was great.
I'm saying right now that if someone votes for the BBC Pride and Prejudice, I will lodge a complaint with the board of directors of the podcast.
And then you'll watch it.
And I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Roy really wants to watch the BBC version, but it's like that would be that would be a really big exception. We made a big exception for the OJ movie, but you know, there's kind of reasons for that. I don't know. But let's see what else we got. But also, you know, we have like your Cluelesses or something. I'm kind of thinking Clueless should win.
So Clueless. Well, we'll see. So yeah. There's Clueless. I think I'm trying to think of some more recent stupid adaptations. There's like a Bride and Prejudice.
Right, right. Which
I guess we'd have to consider there's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Sure. That may be a good populist consensus. There's the Pride and Prejudice that was like locally produced in Utah that I remember seeing like 20 years ago when Utah movies were really big because, you know, we spend so much money here.
Sounds awful. Is that an early Jeanette McCurdy production? So, we should name the books because there's a movie for every book. So there's okay. Mansfield Park, and I'm trying to – is that the Hershey lady? So there's Mansfield Park. There's Emma, several versions of Emma, of course. We already saw Sense and Sensibility. Did they make a movie for Northanger Abbey? I assume they did.
I don't know. They must have titled it something else because Northanger Abbey is just not a good.
It's a terrible title.
It's like Rural Juror.
It's hard to say. And then there's Persuasion, and I'm trying to think if I missed any books, but them's the official Jane Austen book.
Now,
they all have movies.
Now you're a big Jane Austen book fan. Do you have a favorite book? Did I ever ask you that?
Oh man, that was about 15 years ago, right? Yeah. I decided to read Pride and Prejudice just to see what the big deal was, and I think I read it in less than 24 hours. Like I couldn't put it down. I don't know how else to put it. It was like I got into the book, and there was just a point where I was like, why won't Darcy and Elizabeth see that they love each other, and it's just misunderstanding? So, but I mean, so yeah, Pride and Prejudice is probably the best book. But also, it was the first one I read, so, you know, anchoring bias.
Yeah, yeah. You say that every podcast. I feel like your whole life is based on that.
That's probably why I picked them up a movie for number one, right?
Mm, yeah, probably, yeah. Okay, well, I haven't read any of the books, but, well, I don't want to say too much. I'm a little bit curious about, like, you know, switching up the story just a little bit. I mean, I know what happens in Pride and Prejudice because I've seen the Keira Knightley one a few times. And I think I read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies for book club once where we talked about it a little bit.
I actually thought that book was pretty good because it's like 98% of that book is just Pride and Prejudice. And then they just slip in zombies here and there.
Which means, I mean, I don't know. I've never heard anybody talk about the movie. I imagine that means the movie's probably a disaster because it can't balance that as well.
Is that Natalie Portman? It seems like there's a pretty big actress.
I can't imagine.
No, there's no way she's in it. I have to look it up right now.
So there's also the same person who wrote that book also wrote Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, and I didn't read that one.
That sounds pretty good. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, it has...
Lily James. It's got Lily James. I love Lily James.
Oh, Lily James. Wow. Lily James, by the way, she's in the new Hulu show, Tommy and Pamela, or whatever it is. Lily James plays Pamela Anderson.
That was Margot Robbie for some reason.
No. Lily James looks exactly like Pamela Anderson. It's so freaky. I'm like, oh my gosh, wow, she looks just like her. Yeah.
Well, for reference, this is a big old 5.8 on IMDb, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. We might as well get the Rotten Tomato score. It's probably not great.
Yeah. Yeah, check that out.
I am checking it out.
Yeah, do it. Go
there. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, go there.
Okay, here we go. It's a 46%.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
That's not the worst thing we've seen. I think on average, it's probably higher than what we usually watch.
So my hope is that I know we'll probably get something a little off wall. Maybe we'll end up watching Clueless, which I've never seen. Hmm. And maybe we'll watch Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but I hope we watch at least just one classic adaptation. So,
yeah.
Well, I have a pick, so yes, we will.
So. Okay, I have a pick too, and I can be bribed, but I think I kind of know where I'm going.
I think I kind of know where you're going. So
okay.
All right. It probably depends on the voting, huh? It's for me. So anyway, we'll see. Anyway, so that's future business. And then we don't have another category for you guys to vote on because Andy Wilson is coming back, and I think he will be creating a poll. Instead of just choosing three movies that he's never seen before, I think he wants to leave it up to the masses, and we'll have to talk about what form that will take. I think we discussed like the top three votes winning, or maybe like one vote, the one that gets the most votes wins, and then he gets a pick and one of us gets a pick. I don't know. So that'll be up to Andy,
it's
but
in
that's
his hands.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Yep. So here's the big news, and we'll try and keep this short. I just had this crazy moment where, and I really enjoy my job and I'm making some really good money. But while watching the movies for this podcast, I thought, you know, if I could do anything I wanted for a job, it would be that John and I would own some theater and we would like the podcast would be our job. Right. But we would show the movies throughout the week and then have like some sort of thing at the end of the week where, you know, we do it. Right. And we discuss the movies with the audience or whatever. So that obviously is never going to happen because it's a stupid idea. However, I will be in Utah in June.
Yeah.
And there are movie theaters that will let you rent out a theater and you can show whatever you want. So maybe we'll kind of poll the Facebook page and see what people think. But we have this idea that maybe on the Friday or Saturday that I'm there where we rent a theater. And my original idea was like, it's like a festival and we watch all three movies and we take notes live and we just do it live.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That may be a bit much. So another idea is that we watch the first two movies before, and then we get up and watch the third movie communally, and then we do the do our bit.
Then we do the bit. Then we do the we could do a live recording where people are there, and I don't know. I mean, we're totally, this is just us musing, but it's
just
like
musing.
Whoever can get there, it's like, okay, we'll get you in and then you can be live and you can yell at us. We can have a conversation. Maybe we can Skype some people in who like are across the country or whatever, or across the world. The options are unlimited, but we wanted to just talk about this out loud because it's just like, we're seriously like, what if we did this? What would we need to do? What would we need to do to get people to want to do this with us? Yeah. And what would we need to provide? What are just some things to think about, and what are some options we have? So we wanted to throw it out and just say, okay, so this is a great reason to email us, as we said earlier in the podcast. Go ahead and send us an email. Go ahead and mention this on Facebook. Tell us what you think. I'll just say that again right now. Yours, mine, theirs, podcast at Gmail. .com. Find us on Facebook at Yours, Mine, and Theirs. Say anything you want there. And okay, actually, and while I'm talking, I just have to get the the number in again, 801-896-4542. Leave us a message. This is just something we're thinking about. And
we're just thinking.
Yeah, we're thinking about it, but also we really want to do it. So,
So yeah. I do want to say, Richard Templeman, this kind of falls right between your two podcasts. Don't worry, we're not going to interrupt that, which means a little extra work on our part, but not too bad. And I thought, because Andy Wilson wanted, I think, to for his second podcast, it was planned to be our Resurrected Category podcast. Maybe we do that for this. And then we can get a little bit of excitement for this live event where we resurrect people's favorite category and we do three new movies. So maybe that's a good time to do that.
Yeah. So we're really excited about it. But right now we're thinking about this is like a 30% chance this is going to happen.
Yeah. Right now, and also there's a real good chance that if we decide to do it, it's going to be me and John and JB Flinders sitting in the audience.
More than enough, and frankly, too much, honestly. But.
No, I would like to think that we could maybe get And I would love to, because we got a lot of friends in Utah, so I mean, we could probably rope some people in who really aren't participating in the podcast, and maybe grow our numbers from 20 to 22 or something. I don't know. So I mean, anyway, it's a fun idea. I really want to make it happen if we can, and so we'll see what we can do. And again, we'll talk about the different ways this could go, and maybe we'll throw some polls on the Facebook page and see what people would be most interested in and most likely to be willing to participate in.
Yeah.
So I think one movie, like the third movie, and then the discussion, that all by itself is probably a 4 or 5 hour deal, right? So yeah. I think it's probably a bit much to try and do 3 movies and the discussion.
Yeah. Although if anybody out there is willing to do 3 movies, and that sounds more fun than one movie, yeah, we're open. We're open.
I think it'd be awesome to have to do it live, right? Because usually we have time to reflect on our awards, and this would just be us like doing it completely on the fly. So, yeah. Which maybe means it would be a lot worse. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But at least we'll have a crowd to fall back on.
Yeah. Anyway, it's an idea.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that is the show, I believe. And thus ends Eric's servitude. How's your month been? Has it been all right?
Yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun.
Watched Paddington for Prime Minister.
Yes, that was not the highlight.
A long 20 minutes, but otherwise the 200 other minutes that you were watching stuff, I think it's really fun.
I got lucky.
Yeah. I think it was one of the good ones.
Some of them had Jane Austen week. So.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. Okay. So, thank you very much for your contributions. It's charity like yours that keeps the podcast going.
Yeah. And please come back when you finally feel comfortable enough to do so.
Yeah. When you're ready.
I would love to.
That sounds great. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm John, and I said all my intros. I don't have a clever outro because we don't think that too far. We never think that far in advance. We don't know what we're doing, and I'm just flailing right now until we end. Does anybody have anything else to say?
Nope. Hey, thanks both of you, and thanks for the people who listen, and can't wait to keep going.
All right. 2 weeks. Goodbye, everybody.
Muppet nudity. Why is it okay for some Muppets to be naked? Anyway.
Yeah. Some bears.
Some bears.
Jobs. Yeah.